did through with the 2014-2015 annual report for South African Post Office. The members would have received two presentations, one from the Auditor General's Office, the second one from South African Post Office. We have received the research analysis from Mr. Nanishia, and then the minister will not go into the minutes. I think we'll deal with all the ministers of the minutes together. I think we've got one of the insights and then the report. We'll take you time for members so that we can go through that. I just want that we have enough time to deal with issues around the conduct and two presentations. Firstly, as we started to welcome, I think this is the first mission for the group CEO, Mr. Mabanz. Welcome to South African Post Office and to the telecommunications team. You get to know how quite nice he was. Very friendly, but he asked for details. We just do our work. That's nothing more. We just here to do our work. So, wishing you all the best in your responsibility. I know you've been very capable, so I can come up to this issue here and say that you now have a good sense of what's up. Because there was a time, I think, last year, and I was like, hey, when I heard some of your comments, but I think now, looking forward to engagement with the police, we requested that citizens of subcommittees in the post join us today. And the reason why that request went out was because we want the board to take responsibility of the issue. Subcommittees to be able to process issues that are raised by the AG, issues that are raised by us. Because we are not able to be there all the time as the portfolio committee. We are not able to be there most of the time. And therefore we expect that subcommittees of the board should be able to assist in making sure that some of the concerns that are being raised are taken on board. Especially because we picked up that there are a number of things that we raise, and we raise inconsistently, but we don't see change. Now, we would want that responsibility to be taken by the shepherds of the subcommittee, so that when they deal, for example, at risk and audit, they are able to look at those issues. When HR subcommittee, what is it called, RANCOM, is able to look at those issues. So we thought this engagement is quite important for subcommittee chairs to be here. Colleagues who are here maybe might be asking themselves, we received a letter to be here, therefore we might not be very clear. Because it's very important that all levels of responsibility in South African Post Office understand what we are trying to get when we say we are trying to make sure that South African Post Office issues do not turn around. We are trying to make sure that it becomes a vibrant business. So everybody has to be. And we need that comfort as a portfolio committee to be able to see responsibility taken at least at the level of the board. So that's what we have tried. I got an apology from the minister or late arrival. They've got post-sona information address received that last time in the briefing should be with us around 10. Or just after 10, they've got that briefing to join us. The Director General has apologized, acting Director General has apologized. The court hearings for the Director General, we know that the processes that the government has embarked after the Director General was put on leave or on charges. And there was an investigation by the TSC. There's still that process that they are trying to get into conclusion. And I got two apologies from SAPCO. One from the chair of the board with no explanation, just to say it's not going to be here and appointing somebody to be here. I'm not so sure why he's not here. So the letter doesn't say why he can't be here. He just said he's not here. and appointed the deputy chair of the board to be here. And then I got another letter from Mr. Ngubane. Mr. Ngubane, who's not going to be here, appointed two members to send in on the subcommittee that he chairs. I just want to appeal with colleagues. It's not out of excitement that we invite people to the committee. There are specific reasons and what we are trying to achieve. Now, apologies, I always say, did not help us to get to the work. And especially for board chairperson, because we expect the board chairperson to be the driver of matters. But I'm just saying, it's important, we appreciate that people are not full-time, they've got other responsibilities, and that's why we executed the program in advance, because I understood, the board chairperson, I can understand with subcommittee chairs, because they were notified. But a notice of the program was sent in December. Now, if one to say annual report, I expect colleagues from Portos to understand that it's a non-compromise for the chair of the board and the CEO. Once it's annual report, or once it's strategic planning to be. So once that program is issued, because it was issued last year, those two individuals would have closed their diary and ensured that they are available. Now, additional people, as we request them based on what we require, it's something else that you can do. But I just want to appeal to the department to assist us in ensuring that when a program is communicated on standard matters, you can negotiate on other issues. Not on annual performance report, not on annual strategic planning. We are going to strategic planning sessions now in April, and I hope everybody is aware. Otherwise, we're going to turn entities back. But we want the responsible people to be here and to the responsibility. So I hope that message is going across the department so that we do not have problems in the future. So we will take our first presentation from the AG's office. Thank you very much, colleagues, for being here. I think that it has been, now it's your baby, supporting your baby for the time to come. We're looking forward to the discussion. This presentation is for Mr. Songwa, yes, right. Mr. Songwa, and Mr. Joseph and Rice. And I saw our two colleagues. I don't have their names here in front of me, so then I'm happy. See, I already know the people that were here. Let me just, I can't remember your name, just ask this member so that they know.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. My name is Paki Sotlani. I'm a stakeholder relations manager for the AG.
Good morning. My name is Hoshan Pete. I'm the audit manager on the sub-audit. Thank you.
Mr. Van Bansberg and Mr. Sawai will produce the stuff. I see you are the producer here. We can take over at the presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Musa Shongwa. I'm the leader of the team from the AG. And I've got great interest in myself also. We're going to present on the audit outcome for years 14-15. We look at the three areas, the financial statements. We also look at the audit of performance information or predetermined objectives. We also look at compliance with key legislation. We're also going to just say something about internal control and also look at the key focus areas and the recommendations to improve the audit results. I'm just going to hand over to Vikas, who's going to take us through the presentation.
Honourable Chair, honourable members, colleagues from the South African Post Office and other delegates. As Musa mentioned, we're going to take you through the the three areas examined, the internal controls and the key recommendations. I'm going to touch on the audit outcomes. One, we've got qualified audit continuing in terms of financial statements. We've got findings on the performance report, and we've got findings on why. Now, when you take into account in the 14-15 year, there was a lot of issues around governance as well. You know, there was a board that had been dissolved, we had continuous trust, we had pensions at key leadership positions, CEO, CFO. We had obviously a going concern and cash flow concern that deteriorated even further. Capacity, a lot of, if you look at middle management, a lot of capacity was lost in the 14-15 year. So it's a high level good causes for the regression from the 13-14 year. So I can touch on the audit report on the financial statements. Now obviously the going concern is yellow because we haven't issued access opinion on the going concern. It was resolved through the guarantee that was issued by the National Treasury in November that clarified the going concern uncertainty. But in terms of qualification matters, we had issues on property, plants and equipment. That extends to the valuation of the actual assets. We believe that the statements in the actual valuation, the impairment exercise wasn't properly conducted. What we do see is the fact that we saw cash flow constraints yet the assets still reflected a high value in terms of economic benefits. You need to obviously assess your future cash flows against your asset type and determine if you need to impair it and disclose the assets at a lower value. So we have concerns there. In terms of the site registration provision, we qualified that provision. We found that we couldn't get adequate support in terms of the numbers reflected in the financial statements. So we posted a number of these officers. We need to restore those offices to the current form as the length of being in the beginning. That there's a cost involved. In simple terms, for example, to repaint the walls and to remove the tiles, they want a clean floor, etc. So there's a lot of cost involved, so we couldn't provide adequate evidence to the provision. In terms of worthless assets, there was concerns around the valuation. We couldn't get access to the valuer in terms of adequate information to support these assumptions and reports. We also found that when we did the count on these assets that there was a quite high deviation rate in terms of completeness. So we found items on the floor that wasn't on the actual register. So in terms of this time, the effort obligation, this is a liquid accounting issue in terms of disclosure. So the adequate disclosure wasn't made around the benefit plan. We know Sophos moved from a benefit plan to a contribution plan. But there were still some members on the benefit plan that should be disclosed separately. We can say in terms of the liability relating to that benefit plan, there was sufficient funds to cover that liability. So although you haven't seen a specific asset or liability in your balance sheet, there needs to be no disclosure, but we can say that liability was in a favorable position in terms of the assets covering that liability. But the sales require still a certain amount of disclosure, and it's critical for the delivery of the financial statements. In terms of intangible assets, we also found that the impairment exercise wasn't conducted then, so that value might be overstated. And then in terms of the rating paragraphs, we have a number of material errors that add up to be material, mostly in the accruals and revision space. Then, Chair, we've got a separate slide in the regular and focus on experience. I will touch on that in that detail slide, but we did find the statements to note that disclosure was incomplete, and as a result, filling incompleteness, we could confirm the accuracy of that disclosure. Then a big issue was related to tax evasion. We couldn't verify the numbers in terms of reconciling the deferred tax assets in the income tax in the statement of comprehensive income. You note in the disclosure is also not making any sense. The disclosure, there wasn't time for business time basis competence or wasn't able to provide appropriate disclosure in terms of the deferred tax assets. You note that in the statement of comprehensive income, there's quite a big number that increased the loss because the deferred tax asset was utilized against the income statement, because what we're saying at a point in time there was uncertainty of that deduction taking place in the future because we have no certainty of income coming through in terms of taxable income. So as a result, that asset to deduct going forward against that income to a favorable cash flow in terms of tax was to be reversed. Okay, so at this point in time, there is quite a big asset, so as soon as hopefully I'll get turned around and you can have certainty on future profits, that asset will then be recognized. And we then see quite a big spike in the profit line in terms of the state of compressed income. So yeah, just what you will see in your plaque, I've got the recommendations. At the end, I'm not going to go through them in detail. I'm going to touch on them as I go through the matters reported. So basically, if you ask us in terms of what is the key causes for this concern identified. I think the starting point is proper discipline. In terms of weekly monthly control that's been in place, we found the policies was very weak. There wasn't sufficient policies to govern the operations in terms of daily controls and disciplines. And as we know, those disciplines didn't take place. And there's a lot of adjustments taking place at the end to fix matches that have been done on a regular basis. Now, let's need to understand that software volume of transactions are fairly high. It's quite typically in the first bank space as well. So you need to have entrenched disciplines to ensure accurate financial reporting. We did find capacity constraints in the finance unit. We did find that the finance unit, you know, was filling to the capacity of producing the desired results. Specifically support at those levels in terms of accounting. We did find that there's a lot of missing accounts, which makes it very difficult to reconcile at the end. And as a result, there's a lot of steps taking place to resolve these expense accounts. And as I mentioned, due to the volume of transactions, to resolve these expense accounts and reconciling items take a lot of effort and power if you haven't done it on a day-to-day basis. Then there is just a lot of proper record keeping in a lot of these areas. Like note, there was certain technical accounting issues, which brings to skills and capacity. Then in terms of regular business and waste potential, we just all contract management around contracts, ensuring the contracts are signing the interest of software in mind. We find that the module in SAP is underutilized, and SAP's got a lot of capabilities to ensure automated controls are in place to minimize the regular expenditure. Those contract management processes wasn't implemented adequately. And you found that in terms of strategic sourcing, it didn't take place. You found that, you know, there's no procurement plan set up at front to say what are you going to do with our cash in terms of, you know, procuring strategically the services and goods we require. We did say management when we started, it might, in terms of centralized, it might be a good idea to centralize the CHM procurement and the measures of the environment has ensured. But if you decentralize it and to ensure there's appropriate monitoring and controls are in place to identify and manage real experience. So in terms of the performance report, we don't audit the reports comprehensively. We do a selection process. So we audit the goal 1, 2, 4, and 6. We don't report comprehensively on the audit of performance information. We report the goal. So we've got a, you will see that we'll report with, in terms of usefulness and reliability, we conclude the goal. It's not a one opinion. It's goal specific. If we look at, in general, on usefulness, we found that the number of indicators were verifiable in 1.5, specifically in goal 2 and goal 6. But the real concerns in terms of reliability, where you need to produce supporting evidence or for the results, we found that was lacking overall in the performance report that you see in that report. Basically, we found that there was no clear standard operating procedures to collect information, to ensure accuracy, completeness, and validity of information. We also found that obviously the strategic position was vacant for quite some time. There was no head managing this process, and capacity and oversight was always critical, given that the board was dissolved. And I think that now has been resolved going forward, so we will see some of these matters being clear going forward. So in terms of compliance, I'm going to go through detail. There was a number of compliance findings. Specifically, a number of them relate to the qualification areas already, in terms of asset management, liability management. The key thing was also the financial support that was continuing to be provided to the subsidiaries, specifically CFG. That also was seen the financial statement was quite a bit write-off, given that CFG has got cash constraints. That services you provide or that funding is continuously written off in terms of cash flow, which is always a concern. And then obviously if there was some borrowing that we couldn't get the perfect approval for in terms of their assets. So basically, look at compliance in terms of root causes. There was a lot of obviously capacity constraints within the company security unit that had obviously there was a lot of acting business in that position. Capacity constraints in the unit. So that obviously needs to be resolved. And you haven't seen a proper compliance assurance going through in terms of the government structures. You know, specific reports going to say these are the rules and regulations we need to comply with. This is a status update for the scooter, going through the different governance structure. That's going to be critical going forward, that assurance is in place. And that also a little bit to policies and procedures I mentioned as well, because those compliance disciplines need to be entrenched in policies and procedures. Just a simple example is bank reconciliations. It's a compliance issue. But if you're going to policy procedures and no one knows who needs to do what, those findings will come through in terms of audit outcomes. Chair, in terms of the regular frequency of financial expenditure, you would know that the number was obviously increased significantly. And we started with the engine board to identify different concerns. Obviously, that has led to the identification of regular expenditure was there in the past. So, the contrary view of the comparison 100%, of course, obviously, as you pick up issues, you go back to the context like previously and you can disclose the expense against that irregular. From a critical financial expenditure, you see our increase there, specifically relating to limited and interest in terms of size. And so we need to know that obviously given the cash flow constraints, it was difficult obviously for SAP to go out on vendors and get new suppliers that want to do business within the point in time. So you would continue with all suppliers we had agreements with. We were already owing cash and starting payment plans with there to continue the services. That's just keeping the ship going because of the business. That is relevant, unfortunately, in a high number of the regular expenses. Management can touch on that in more detail. So, a couple of these matters, if you look at, and remember, this is a reflective of the period under review, but it's not current status. We spoke about the leadership concerns, we spoke about the financial disciplines. In terms of risk management under governance, that's not something we haven't spoken about, but I mean, at SAP, risk management was more done from a compliance point of view. We haven't seen the appetite of risk in terms of taking risk seriously, ensuring it's regularly updated, ensuring you respond to those risks. We found that the residual risks for all that's identified stay the same on even DPs because the likelihood of that risk materialized and having addressed for proper controls and checks and balances. So at a high level, like as I've mentioned, we've got slides and we'll see the detailed recommendations. I've touched on most of them through the presentation. I'm just going to touch you on the key things we thought was driving the outcomes and needs to be resolved. Obviously, from a leadership point of view, the board has now been appointed, which is great news. The CEO has been appointed. A number of EXCO, as you've gone through the audit process, EXCO, if you look at EXCO, you would find 75% of EXCO members were acting. Now, if you look at the news, I see a lot of those vacancies in fraud, specifically the CIO vacancy, because that's a critical vacancy. Currently, the CIO vacancy is obviously still there, with the CIO of the organization in November, and we've got still the CFO vacancy from my executive director point of view. But critical for us is not just filling the board vacancies extra, you need to ensure that your middle management and senior management is strong to support board. We found there's a lot of vacancies in that area, obviously. We need to deal with that in terms of a comprehensive ASOS strategy to ensure the capacity, the way they're going to do business going forward, aligned to the structure. And the key thing, like I mentioned, the policies and procedures is that you've added that discipline sort of things. So it links to HR because everyone needs to know what they need to do in terms of weekly, daily. Those policies and procedures are not there, people are acting, so there's no accountability. In terms of performance management, ensuring that what needs to be done is done, everyone is aware of what needs to do. So that's for us critical, the process procedure that needs to break the business in terms of daily activities. The going concern of cash is obviously a big concern in terms of the going concern assumption. Obviously that means it's critical to resolve that before the financial papers get submitted this year, because that delays the concluding of the audit. In terms of cash flow, a lot of inefficiencies in not adding cash. Of course, you generalize control. From a strategic point of view, management is chasing cash rather than making strategic decisions. So that needs to be resolved quite quickly, and I know managers are working on that. And then software is obviously the problem of IT. We found there was a lot of concerns in the IT space. Obviously, that reason, like I've mentioned, has been acting for some time, has been appointed now. So that's good news. In terms of IT, we need to ensure that there's a comprehensive IT strategy that directs the direct business. The IT steering committee needs to be effective. And IT shouldn't lead the process. I mean, IT is only an agent. Business needs to do process with the support of IT. So it's going to be critical in terms of improving the control environment as well. We found that a lot of activities done through manual intervention. Even like I said, the volume of transactions, you need automated disciplines in place. You need that IT support is expensive. So you need to always make the right investments. That's why we're saying that IT strategy is important. We did that this time as well. It was often a lot of inefficiencies in the process. That's all for me, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that. I'm just going to check if you have anything you want to check. Remember, you take any picture with the Auditor General's Office. It's specifically on what they have presented, not on the content of issues in the post office. Of course, we're going to ask if there's any clarity. But that one, something clarified quickly. Okay. On our agenda. Sorry, I didn't say There are two members who sent in apologies. Honorable Shin, Honorable Fanner Nerve, and I understand Honorable Shin is going to be able. Those are the ones that I thought I should make them recorded.
Thank you, Chair. Sometimes in this movie, when I've spoken to Peppers before, my impression would be a bit like I should.
Can you hear me now?
We're black mushrooms, you know, we kept in the dark and we fed a diet of a particular variety, fish from the sapper, so it's a lot of it's good news and turnaround and positive, and then we come and thank God for the orders to general, and thank God for the work that you do, because the picture that you present is completely different to what we've received in the past. This is the second year running that the SAPO has tabled their suggestions, that the SAPO has tabled their annual report late. And in fact, we're now coming up to, we're 10 months into the financial year, and SAPO has to do another annual report. Do you have any indication whether they're on track to table the annual report in time for this financial year? Again, probably an academic question, but given that you've identified controls and disciplines that need to be put in place, etc., is it part of your function, or do you take an interest in monitoring to see whether those controls are being put in place in the year now under review compared to the previous year, or are you just completely reactive with the information that's presented to you? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, as we all know, it is important to just realize that this refers to the prior year, and that this is a sort of a historic overview of what has happened. Now, clearly, nobody can be satisfied that there was, in fact, a turnaround that was there. If I look at some of the slides presented by the Auditor General, I think up to the end of this financial year, in fact, in many respects, there was regression. If I look at the arrows, down-pointing arrows, etc., on the initial slides. What you have presented to the committee last year was also what was necessary in the leadership. Now, we know that there is a new leadership in place. You have also made some comments. However, do you think that having been involved in the SAPO audit for some years now, that the capacity constraints, general, you know, the ability to manage the IT system, consequence management, and all of that will bring us to success? Do you think there is, first of all, adequate will that remains? And secondly, do we have the capacity to manage that within SAPO? Thank you, Chair.
Just one thing. Do you find any system in the operation? When you spoke about the issue of IT within the IT system, normally other companies would have SAP, would have Oracle, would have this, any that you know.
Can I pause it? All of these questions are strategic questions. I'll try my best to answer them from another point of view. So in terms of tracking to travel, the concern in both the last 2 years was the going concern assumptions had to be confirmed. Unfortunately, from an auditing point of view, looking at cash, as we're saying, SAP was not a going concern. Okay. But it's not taking SAP's control to confirm that equity will be injected or they will be guaranteed. That's something that the government has and Treasury needs to confirm. So in both those instances, that obviously takes a bit of space with the Treasury, that's got a sustainability committee, as you said, that needs to make recommendations to the final minister, that should be approved, and then that uncertainty gets resolved. I know from my understanding, and management can add to it, that obviously that process is underway now. So that by the time we get to the end, we know what the going concern assumptions will be, which is in the past, that was a delayed process. Well, let me tell you, in the last year, we had an ACP, and then obviously the ACP had certain targets, but we couldn't get evidence for those targets, and as a result, we said, we're not comfortable with the going concern assumptions. So, that first delayed the opinion. This year, we interacted with management, they're proactive in resolving the going concern, what cash we need, so by the time the financial gets submitted by May, I would think that it will be resolved, and I would think that we can sign on time this year. I can't see in the future, but that's my opinion. In terms of monitoring, so we need to understand that if you look at the insurance providers, you've got three levels of insurance. Number one, you've got management insurance. Okay? Then you've got internal audit, and you've got different governance structure, and then you've got external audit. So it's critical that the management insurance is there in the first instance. If the management insurance are not there, they're always going to struggle to get insurance, because they're going to fetch you the controls of working. And then we come at the end and say, well, we cannot run controls, so we need to find ways to audit the numbers substantially. It takes a lot of effort. We've got regular interactions with management through our quarterly engagements. I must say, in the last year, we had got a lot of support from management in terms of listening. We had bi-weekly monthly meetings with the CEO, weekly meetings with the CFO, we had monthly meetings, or quarterly meetings, monthly sometimes, bi-monthly meetings with the minister. So a lot of interactions to say, well, what's the status? We're obviously not looking in detail. So we're giving a sense of what we're seeing. So not as if we only come at the end and provide assurance. In terms of regulation and capacity, the key thing is the need cash, not the need cash. Okay? The need cash to obviously fill positions, the need cash to fill the IT constraints, the need cash to just pay the suppliers. So if you don't have cash, you're not going to get the disciplines and the service support you need to run the business. If you look at cash and with the new leadership, new board, I'm confident that they can turn around. Obviously, there is still, like I said, concerns in money management. There's a lot of vacancies. You need to ensure you get the capacity specifically in finance. If you look at the finance diagram in terms of capacity, it's quite thin, I believe. So you need to deal with some of those capacity constraints. But first, you need cash. And if you get cash, you can resolve a number of the concerns. And obviously, you spend that cash wisely, and you've got the leadership now in place to manage that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, for that
for
the information. I think it has helped, and to sort of give us a sense of the issues and the concerns from the conversation. Move directly to get the presentation from Apple. I'll first give over to Ms. Soda. I hope I'm pronouncing it correct. Okay, the Deputy Chairperson of the Board, she is. And then I would request that we get all the chairpersons of the Board as well, thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and members of the committee. With me, I have my chairperson of the Zoria Board, who will introduce themselves.
Good morning. My name is Moroto Mulisi. I'm the board of the FIC.
Good morning. I'm Robert Nguna, chairperson of the FIC Advisor Committee.
Good morning. Good morning. My name is Donna Role, and I'm the chairperson for Human Resources.
Good morning. My name is Mama Shubi. I'm the chair for the Strategy Turnaround Plan and Corporate Strategy.
Good morning, my name is Elvis Salawale. I chair the CSG committee.
Good morning, Mdu Zagwe, chair of Forest Risk.
Thank you, fellow board members. Chairperson and the honorable members of the committee, first would like to thank you for giving us the opportunity to present our financial results. We appreciate guidance that we receive from the committee, as it will assist us to improve the performance of SACOM. It is common knowledge that the results that we are about to present do not complete a good story. But it is not all doom and gloom. We have hope that this company will turn around. We have appointed our CEO, Mark Van, who joined us on the 15th of December, on the 15th of January. So he's been with us now for 1 month. And since his appointment, we have had two board members,
and has made good progress in stabilizing the numbers in response to some of the issues that have been raised by this committee. At this point, we are also dealing with issues that have been raised by the SIU, and today we expect a report that will be presented by the public protector. Once we have the report, we will engage these members on the way forward. Since the CEO joined the company, he has been at various meetings with the National Treasury, the BPPS, as well as the Commercial Bank, trying to seek funding for the capitalization of SAPO. And he will be in a position to give you feedback today on the results of those meetings. On that note, I would like to hand over to the CFO, to present to you, to take us through the report.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, honorable members. I'll jump right in. Acting CFO, yes. Yeah, I'm acting CFO.
The delegation is from the Institution of Opportunity to Themselves. It's only two. No.
Yes. I'm Nicola Dewar, acting as CFO for SAPO. I'm CFO of Prozac.
I'm Mark Bond, I'm the group CEO of the
Yeah, thank you. My name is Andy Leyabo, Group Company Secretary for SAPO.
I'm Anthony Seagills, Group Executive Human Capital Management.
I'm Chris Fable, Group Executive Corporate Affairs.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Omer Kashalembe. The DDG for SOC Oversight at the DTPS. This is my first meeting, Chair. Thank you.
Good morning. It's Renee Luranga. I'm Chief Director responsible for Coastal Resources Oversight.
Okay. Jumping into the financial results. Remember, these are for the year ended March 2015, so almost a year has progressed since this time. And these results reflect the impact of the four-month strike from September through to December in 2014, a period of protracted labour instability, loss of confidence in terms of customer protections of the post office, therefore loss of volumes in terms of revenues. So in the past 5 years, revenues used to be in the region of between 6 and 6.8 billion a year. You could see the decline in 2014-15 to 5.3 billion for the year. The four-month strike was quite devastating because mail simply did not get through the system. In terms of expenses, they were higher than revenue, unfortunately. So we posted an operating loss of 994 million for the 2014-15 year. Now that is largely because the post office has a large fixed cost base in terms of mail centers, in terms of delivery of vehicles, in terms of the universal service obligation of delivering letters to every point in the country every day. So those had to run even though they were not full. So there were a lot of empty letters also came under the cost. So moving down the profit and loss statement, finance income, that's interest income on the post-bank investment portfolio of 138 million. There were also fair value adjustments, which related to fair value income of the post-bank investments also in the investment portfolio. It's just a difference in accounting treatment. And then there was interest paid of 197 million. About 45 million of that was interest paid to depositors, and the balance was interest paid on overdrafts. And that gave a loss before tax of 937 million for the 2014-15 year versus the previous year of 552 million. In terms of the tax line, in the prior year we had a credit because we were recognizing a deferred tax asset. So in other words,
The company was running at big losses, and assuming that you could make profits in the future against which you could utilize those assessed losses, you then raise an asset. However, in the 2014-15 year, it became clear that the going concern basis of preparation was at risk because we couldn't see the probability of future cash flows to justify keeping that asset on the balance sheet. And therefore, we had to write it off through the profit and loss statement. So if you look at the core operating loss, it was $937.6 million, but then the net impact of that deferred tax asset write-off then worsened the loss for the year to $1.5 billion. And then you have this funny thing at the bottom, which is other comprehensive income for the year, which doesn't go into your trading results, but again, this was a different type of fair value adjustment on some of the post-tax investments. So there was a slight loss in terms of the healthy maturity class of investments, to give a total comprehensive loss for the year of $1.5 billion, which is not a pretty picture. If we move on to the next slide, I just want to touch on the fact that this reflects the profit and loss trend over the past year. So 2012, a profit of $159 million, a loss in 2013. You can see the post office was struggling in terms of its operating model and remaining profitable and sustainable, even by 2014. 2015, tough year. We went under administration after the board resigned. We had that strike. And basically, this is a loss of revenue. In the 2015 year, there were some cuts to, planned cuts to expenditure, but also some unplanned cuts, simply because we didn't pay suppliers. And the picture worsened. So I put up an unaudited number on our year-to-date end of January loss, just to paint a picture that in the 2016 financial year, the impact of not paying suppliers, the impact that has on our value chain, has been so significant that we're pretty much in a similar hole. If we then move on to the balance sheet, the balance sheet can see, if you look at total assets year on year, in 2013-14, it's obviously $11.3 billion of total assets. And in 2014-15, it's reduced to $9.8 billion. Now, that is the impact of the $1.5 billion loss, actually using cash reserves in the book office. On the liability side had a corresponding change, but the important thing to look at is the equity and reserves line, where the equity, which comprised a large portion of retained earnings, was $2.3 billion in 2013-14, reduced to $816 million in 2014-15 as a result of the loss posted for the year. If you strip out the post-bank investment portfolio of $6.9 billion, that leaves Marco with $3 billion balance sheet, which is $1.1 billion thereabouts of property, plant and equipment, some IT equipment, and the post-retirement medical aid asset, which is ring-fixed in terms of investments, and no cash at all. So Sarpo was operating on an overdraft. At the end of 2015, it just happened to be a $75 million position, but the average overdraft was $350 million for the year. If we then move on to the statement of cash flows, you can see that we've used net cash used in operating activities, $207 million. The investing activities reflect some capex of $122 million, but there were some inflows, again, from the post-bank investment portfolio, which made the total number 57 that we used. We were given a $50 million subsidy from DTS, which helped us. There was utilization of a subsidy from the prior year of $135 million. And then the funds that we set on behalf of third parties for things like payment of their telecom accounts or municipal bills or traffic fines, etc., it either is an increase or decrease depending on the day on the year end for. In this case, the year end wasn't over a weekend, so there was a reduction in the amount that we collected to get a total cash movement for the year of negative $391 million. Cash at the beginning of the year was $3.7 billion, and Sarpo had small cash balances in that number. However, by the end of the year, the cash at the end of the year of $3.3 billion is predominantly post-bank and third-party money, nothing Sarpo. So if you look at this cash flow statement and you look at the balance sheet, so why are people complaining because there's no cash? And, you know, because they say they've got no cash. On the balance sheet is cash, but it's all ring fenced, and Swapo has very strict discipline in place that they will not touch any of those bank cash. In terms of the current status, we're still reliant predominantly on revenue from mail, for mail services. We're still not back to pre-strike levels of revenue, which means that our operating results have been lower than we'd like. And it's two things. One, we have to regain trust of customers. And secondly, we do need cash to unlock the operation value chain. So we need to pay the buyers so that letters can be offloaded from airplane into a warehouse. Then the warehouse can get paid, and then the letter can go onto a truck, and then et cetera. And then get to customers within the agreed time frame. So our delivery standards are pretty poor at the moment, simply because we have no cash to operate the business. It's concerning that our courier revenue has deteriorated and continues to deteriorate, so the board are taking action on that in terms of the strategy and the way forward for CFG, and also rebuilding the courier and parcel part of the software business. It's been quite tough in that the term loans that we've raised R1 billion worth of loans against the R4 billion guarantee. That has all gone to fund operations. But we still have that creditors backlog, which we need to settle, which is, I think, the review will touch on the plans around how we look at the future. The investment memorandum that the group CEO was with the executive team on has been presented to the Ministers of Telecoms and Finance as well as the Deputy President. And we have also done a roadshow with some other banks looking for funding and have some pretty good feedback from that. In terms of the annual performance indicators, again, if you look at the slide because it's cold, it looks pretty bad. So what I'll do is I'll talk to the metrics underlying each of those and indicate where it was a cash constraint or where, what was the underlying driver behind not achieving most of those objectives, because 14% is a shocking number. In terms of any financial sustainability, we didn't achieve any of our financial metrics because the post office continued to post losses, so we didn't make the budgeted revenue numbers, the budgeted profit numbers. We had a challenging operating environment, which I've already touched on. In terms of post-bank depositor growth, they didn't grow at the 5% we'd assumed. They only grew at 3.2% because the impact of the hike was also felt by the bank, because the channel, the branch channel, is the only way of accessing the money if they don't have a card, if they've got a book box. In terms of the customer satisfaction survey, we were supposed to run one, but we did not have the money to run that survey, so therefore that is also not a juice result. Moving on to remaining customer-centric, we did not meet our delivery standards for mail. We had a lot of backlogs that weren't processed as easily as they should have been, and some of the challenges in the logistics process with our line haul suppliers were that loads of simply not moved because they hadn't paid the suppliers. So it's been quite tough to keep the delivery performance at the level it should be. In terms of the third one, providing a secure integrated infrastructure, we had one goal there, which was to refurbish some of the workplace environments from an OSHA perspective. And we refurbished 9 out of the planned 45 properties, and we then went into administration and there was a vending freeze. So the financial results did not support increased spend on those lines. In terms of the fourth strategic goal, the innovative, affordable, and relevant services, this refers to the address rollout. We had a target at the beginning of the year of almost 1.2 million new addresses that had to be delivered. We renegotiated the target with ICASA to 500,000 and delivered just over 500,000. But the original target of 1.5 million we didn't achieve. In terms of additional retail points of presence, we introduced additional 11 against the target of 50. ICASA agreed that for this year, for the 2015 year, we did not need to roll out 50 given the financial constraints. So we've reflected it as we did not achieve the objective in the corporate plan. However, we did renegotiate targets with the regulator.
In terms of the people metrics, investing in people, in terms of the gender equity and disability targets, there was a lot of turnover of staff. We lost a lot of good skills. So in the past, we would have met these group targets for total females or total disc females, etc. And we missed them by between 1 or 2 percentage points across the board for each of those categories. But again, it's an impact of the economic situation in which the staff has found itself and a difficulty in attracting and retaining good skills. The next one, in terms of maintaining good corporate governance, there were 3 objectives. One was developing and implementing an ethics strategy and program. It was the plan was developed and it was approved by the previous board. However, given management instability, it was not implemented properly, so we need to pick that up. The next one was audit findings, resolving all high audit findings within 12 months. We did not achieve that, predominantly because some of the items required significant systems investment to resolve, particularly in the Postbank space. And Postbank has started the implementation program to get their banking license, so there are some big IT implementations going on right now, which will address some of those issues. And then there were some compliance findings with a deadline to resolve within 6 months. Again, there were some systems requirements, particularly in the seeker verification space. And there were a few phase areas which SAPO is looking at as well, because we need to retain our ESG license. And then the environmental sustainability objectives were reducing carbon emissions and reducing energy consumption, and we achieved those. So on the face of it, it looks bad, but we did whatever we could as management to achieve these. Picking up on some of the outstanding audit issues that the Auditor General's earlier presentation, in terms of intangible assets and property, plant and equipment, what we wanted to do was appoint an external firm to assist resolving this. SAA did. They appointed a firm, and it quite a large budget to fix the assets. And we didn't have the money to do that. And we don't have the internal skills and capability to do it. So it's something that we need to table to the board again and just move on. We are in the process of valuing, with external valuers, valuing the property portfolio. So that should provide some degree of evidence that the Auditor General can actually look at for this year in audit. But the other assets, furniture and equipment and chairs and things dotted over all our locations, we'll need some assistance with that. In terms of the site restoration provision, that is specifically where we have leased property and we need to get, when we exit a lease or when we exit the premises, we have to restore it to an agreed position. We have a work group in finance with the property team in terms of how we are actually going to make sure that we get additional evidence this year and make sure that we come up with a more robust provision number. The feeling at the moment is that provision number is overstated rather than understated. In terms of the retirement benefit obligation, we're appointing actuaries again this year, and we have made sure that the scope of their work includes that particular retired the defined benefit plan that we hadn't included in the previous year. So that will be addressed in the upcoming audit. In terms of regular expenditure, profuse and wasteful expenditure, we have increased the monitoring and surveillance in the business. We have regular financial misconduct committee meetings, which I chair. We have referred a number of issues for investigation, and there are some disciplinary actions coming out of that. So this is receiving a lot of attention from the senior management team and all the business unit heads as well, and irregular reports that go to SAPO IFCO in this regard. In terms of deferred tax and income tax, yes, that was an area of particular weakness in the last year in audit. The AG had to audit, they tried to audit it 3 times. This year what we're doing is we're appointing an accounting firm to review what management does, to help us get the disclosure right, get the calculations right, etc., before we give it to the AG, just to simplify that process, because we don't have the internal expertise. In terms of heritage assets, this is they reside in the stamp museum, where we've got text and artwork and original stamps. We we need to pay the valuer and then repeat the exercise, I think, given that there were some issues identified with last year's check in terms of the account. In terms of the order of predetermined outcomes, what we're doing this year is we are going to make sure before we submit the corporate plan that we have verifiable, smart objectives, and we have made sure that our processes to collate the information and prove the metrics before it even goes into the corporate plan, so that we know if we can report properly on it. And then there's a slide on the way forward, which I'll hand over to the CEO to touch on.
One step at a time. Thank you, Chair, Honourable Members. If I may make some introductory remarks here about what I've seen in the 1 month that I've been there, it might help to guide the discussion. I think it's important for everyone to understand that the post office per se and the operations and the people that work there are not dysfunctional. We're an outdated organization, but we have a capacity to get back to the revenue line in our basic business, which was in evidence 2, 3, and 4 years ago, and we have no greater ambitions than that in respect of ordinary posts. We also, though, have extraordinary opportunities of growth, which are manifestly demonstrated around the world, where post offices, as what I would describe as the socio-economic centers of society, have made themselves relevant to modern organizations, branching out into financial services, into insurance products, and to any manner of logistics and courier services which we are capable of offering. We have a sort of two-step situation to deal with. First of all, we have to pay for the past. The creditor backlog has now become critical to the point where we are already entertaining some legal actions around it. But beyond the financial and legal implications of not settling your creditors, that translates into an operational paralysis, which translates into a loss of confidence in our clients, which translates into an absence of their continued revenue. So much so that our clients are prepared to pay almost any cost to substitute our service. That actually eventually becomes an opportunity for us, because when we get back to things like the packaging and parcels and courier business, we have found that the margins of the private sector have widened our margin possibility quite significantly. The post office is still the low-cost producer in the country for the delivery of mail items and related services. And we believe that we'll be able to compete, and we are the low-cost producer. We have the biggest client base in South Africa, and we have the biggest installed base in South Africa, and our competitors have had to a great extent duplicate some of that infrastructure. But we first need to unclog the arteries. We do have a healthy heart. I must tell you that I've been around to the operating mail centers, all of them in the country, and I've been to a number of post offices. And without exception, I think we've got to a point where there is a willingness and a desire to just get back to work. I have not found aggression, I have not found militancy, and I've engaged with 3 of our principal unions, and I've found that they, like we, want to be partners with us, because we have a common cause, which is to get back, you know, to an operating environment that's sustainable. Our ambitions, when we redrew the plan, let me stop there for a minute. For the last 10 days leading up to the end of last week, the executive and I closed ourselves into a room, and we started talking about the post office on first principles. And we started drawing up every single revenue line in the post office from first principles. So the manager who's responsible for sending motor vehicle assurance started with how many cars are there out there, and what do we charge, you know, per license, and what is the growth in the car pool, and what is the adjustment that we're going to get from government in terms of the allowed increase and so on. So the investment memorandum, as I call it, was grounded on management participation and building the organization from the ground up. And that has delivered a plan which we believe will get us returning to profitability in the 2018 financial year. You've seen where we are year to date. We're into about just over R1 billion loss for the March 16 year, which is in 6 weeks' time. And so we're going to have a similar disastrous financial result in respect of the year which is closing now. But I do believe that we have the will, and I also believe that the plan that we've now presented to the banks and to Treasury has got a validity that they are in the process of buying into. We finished 4 presentations to the banks yesterday, actually, on the basis that we sought interim bridging capital against the unutilized government guarantees and against the future possibility of equity injections from Treasury. I don't want to steal anything from the budget speech, which is tomorrow, but I have to say that the Treasury in meetings yesterday were very supportive of what our plan is and very encouraging, and we also got a lot of very positive feedback from the banks. There's a general word out there that the post office is a necessary part of the South African socio-economic fabric and that it's in the national interest to have it restored to its place in the community. And so there's an element of national necessity which is coming into the discussion, and that's how we feel about it at the post office. It's extraordinary to find an organization where just by the injection of cash you can switch it back on again. We do not have the challenges of massive future capital expenditure. We do not have the challenges of exchange rate challenges. We do not have the challenges of international competition locally, other than in places like the courier business. And there, I've already been approached by a number of international alternatives who would like to work with rather than against us. We are the low-cost producer. We are the installed base. And there's no reason why we shouldn't be the most competitive. I can tell you that I've got 3,000 of emails in my intray. The first one is offers to form joint ventures with the post office, and they come in almost every day. The second one is complaints and potential actions from creditors, and the third pile is people that want to come and work there. And those are all the growing piles. I think that if you walk around the actual operations of the post office, if you walk to Cape Mail, for example, you will see that there are machines standing ready there for the volumes that need to come back. And I think that if we demonstrate rather publicly that we are back in business by, for example, paying the lease at the Bryanston post office, unlocking the chain, opening the door, people want to come back and they will come back. For example, there's a very quick win there. We usually get about 330 million in December in relation to post office rentals. Well, people just stop paying them when you can't get into a post office little point in paying it. But that could all come back rather quickly, and we will dispense the penalty which is normally paid in February, and we will leave the boxes unlocked as a gesture of goodwill, and we will invite people back into our space. If you look at the valuation metrics that drive some of the most valuable companies in the world, like Facebook and Twitter and Amazon and the like, in e-commerce, you find that their value is determined by their client acquisition strategy. We have the most clients. We have the most addresses. I think we've treated them as clients. I don't think we've treated them as economic entities that we could engage with across a lot of levels. In the rest of the world, postal business is around 30% of total revenue. In our case, it's more than 70%. And so we wish to change in time some of our revenue sources. Financial services and the provision of financial services is a big part of our forward thinking, but it requires us to complete the corporatization and full licensing of Postbank, which until the time as we're ready to do that, is a totally insulated organization. Essentially what the post office does, the post bank does, is it takes deposits and invests them in government treasury bills. So it's totally state money. We do not interfere. We never will interfere with it. That will be the first change. The second change will be, and some of these things will come out in the public protectors reported in the SIU investigation, which aren't yet public documents, but which I have in sight of. If we were to dispense with the irregular expenditure and wasteful expenditure that's happened over the last decade in the post office, we would be sitting with a lot of money. And our attitude to that, which has been expressed already to the public protector, is that we will work with it to root out all of the truths that underlie that economic fraud. We've also met with the SIU, I've met with them, and I have agreed to become a co-applicant in the court cases against those people who defrauded the post office. We don't seek to defend those actions, we seek to attack them. And so we've had very good responses from that. The other factor that wasn't in the numbers that you presented to the banks was that we, for reasons that escaped me, in 2010-11 decided we didn't need the subsidy for not the commercial activities in the post office. Now we have the universal service obligation, which requires us to deliver post in certain rural areas which aren't and never will be commercially justifiable. We accept that obligation, but we also have to accept the commercial rationale that if the government imposes obligations like that on us, then we need to subsidize for them. I think in principle that has been recognized, and that is in orders of magnitude 400 million rand a year, which we would look forward to into our future. The amount of capital that we have to raise to settle the past is principally around creditors, which we've talked, which are approaching a billion rand as we sit here. They're around contractual obligations with labor, which have arisen over the last 4 years in relation to unpaid promised salary increases, in relation to conversion of casual to permanent labor, and in relation to equal pay for equal value of work. I've engaged at the top level of the union around these, and it is our wish, and I think their expressed desire, that we reach some form of settlement in relation to the past. I'm hoping that we are able to negotiate a number which deals with the past, which is inextricably linked to a structural accord related to the future. We cannot survive another prolonged strike in the post office, and I think that's common cause amongst us and amongst the people that work there. The damage that the 2014-15 strike did to revenue, which was about a 30% impact on revenue, never bounced back. And so you'll find that all of our cost-to-income ratios are skewed and they've remained skewed. So, for example, our labor cost-to-income ratio is 65%. Most efficient operating competitors in our world are down at 40%. There are two ways that you can get there. You can increase revenue and you can reduce costs. Our preferred route is to grow the organization, not shrink it. And I think that is at the core of the strategy that I presented to government about a year ago in wanting to get involved and try and help the situation. And I think we are, you know, quite broad-based buy into that opportunity. The next area of growth beyond e-commerce and the courier business, which is extraordinarily profitable, is our engagement with government. It should be self-evident to everybody that to the extent that we as sister companies and part of the same organization can, you know, work for one another, that would save the fiscus capital. It is, of course, obvious that where we can't perform, the government needs to get the job done, and they will engage with the private sector at what we believe to be costs way above where we could deliver the service if we were delivering the service. However, it's up to us to prove that, and we believe we can prove that in a number of areas. And we do believe that we will stand up and demonstrate that transactions like payment of pensions, like payment of social grants, properly belong within the post office system and not within the private sector. That won't happen immediately. There will be some costs that are going to be incurred in terms of systems and other capacity that we need to build that. We've taken that into account. We are ambitious about how soon the government's spending inside the post office will arrive, but over the next 3 years we think will be a reasonable part of our success. But in our funding plan, we literally only assume the next couple of hundred million. I know that sounds a glib number, but in the context of our income statement and balance sheet, it isn't a small number, because we believe that we will earn the right. I've characterized the document that I put to government and to Treasury and to the banks as an investment memorandum. We don't seek to be a cost center. We seek to be a viable commercial concern. We don't seek to raise debt to government, against government guarantees as a matter of policy. My mandate and my purpose in coming to the post office was to create a financially independent organization within 3 years and a valuable asset within 5. And I think that it would be our wish that within 3 years, if we need capital, it won't be to pay for the past, it would be to invest in the future. And we will be able to issue South African post office bonds, which, as you, those of you as old as I will remember, were very popular capital instruments, both locally and in international markets. We see that will return. It won't return until we have the right debt equity ratio in the company, until we have proper capital. I look at balance sheets slightly different than accountants do, and I'm not as concerned about the accounting reports as I am about the economic truth. The economic truth about our properties, and I understand that that there were issues around getting to those values, is that we have a accounting policy which carries our properties at cost. I'm far more concerned about the market value of our properties. I'm also concerned about whether we need any properties at all. You know, and I think that everything in SAFO is up for re-examination. And there's a case to be made for us to be very light on assets. We are an IT company. We in the new world, we would operate in the ether, not on the ground, as much as we used to in the past. But there are ample examples offshore. We're similar, you know, in New Zealand, in Japan. In fact, Austria, for those of you not aware of it, the biggest listing on the Japanese stock market was the post office. And the Italian post office is about to be listed, and Royal Mail is there. And if you look at the intersection between e-commerce and physical infrastructure, you will notice that Amazon just acquired 30% of the United Parcel Service, and they're building their own infrastructure. So that world is exciting to us, but there's money to spend and competence to be delivered. So properties and other assets we will look at critically. We also will look at all of the contracts that we've got. I have, without exception, found that every contract that we have is not commercially biased in our favor. In fact, quite to the contrary. We have some evergreen contracts that shouldn't be evergreen. We have some lease agreements which are not commercial. And it seems to me that we've been the whipping boy of contractual negotiations over the last few years, and that's just another reflection of an unstable leadership and guidance that's over. The other thing that's over in the post office is irregular and wasteful expenditure. We will own the checkbook at the middle of the company, and we will monitor it on an almost real-time basis. I'd rather respond, if I may, then, Chair, to some questions. Except to say that I've been down into the gut of the organization, and it's not as bad as it looks. The people that have been there for 30, 40 years, the people that have been there for 2-3 months. We have common cause, and we have a common enemy, which is poverty. And the need to survive as a post office is quite a strong force. And we would like to change that from a need to survive to a wish to succeed. And in every engagement, without exception, I've had, there seems to be that willingness, that attitude, that hope. And the numbers are not that big in the context of the South African budget. The sorts of numbers that we're talking about in terms of cash and capital injections in the post office are orders of magnitude between 2.5 and 3.5 billion. Good morning, Minister. And in the context of that being an investment rather than an expense, it is our firm belief that the government couldn't find a better place to spend their money than to invest it in the turnaround case that we presented to Parliament. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you very much. Welcome, Minister. We get your apology for later on to your briefing. We just concluded working, we just concluded all the presentation. We start with the HR office giving us a selection of our discipline and then went into help. Can I have the CEO, can I have your mic off? Thank you. We'll move into questions, comments, Minister, just to allow you to settle, and then we'll get you an opportunity to have some reflection. Honorable Sotetsu, Honorable Mackenzie, Honorable John Jenny, Honorable Killian, that's the member.
Thank you, Sotetsu. We really do appreciate the honesty of the presentation and the input of the CEO. But, you know, it's not the first time that you engage with people on the same issue and the same promises. The question is, how are you going to get the same honesty in implementing, you know, the solution to these challenges? And for me, without pointing a finger, the big question goes to HR. How do we have, I mean, this paralysis whereby almost everyone is incompetent? And we say we have inadequate oversight, but from the look of the report and the past report, it's like there was no oversight at all. Risk management also is almost next to zero. We are trying by all means to have hope in a kind of solution. We think we are all, you know, we are all in this business to make sure that we can have this example to get together the pieces, you know, to assemble all those pieces and be on our feet. But it's very difficult. But not to what extent can we get assurance that they are moving forward from where we are? We are really going to get people who are, you know, honest in implementing the mandate of SAPO and, you know, save us from the shame that we are in. We really are concerned about the situation. We had hope in the past, but as time goes on, it was some kind of a hopeless hope. And we are trying by all means to be as supportive as we can. But we get that hope again and make sure that we do what is required of us. But the backdrop to the HR about the people who are being appointed, I mean, all that we have, we are very incompetent. This is a situation whereby other people will ask about the other people's qualifications as to the legitimacy of those particular qualifications. It really is not understandable as to how can we really be where we are. And from the current situation, maybe one will ask a question as to the ascending SME. What can you say about the interest? Because, I mean, there must be some accumulation of interest one or the other. But moving forward, we need this financial assistance. And what is about the situation that is getting worse, sort of, given the interest of the loans and the late payments, ascending payments of the creditors and salaries as well.
Thank you, Chair. I spoke to Honourable Shin. He said I could have a 35 question. Where do I begin? Perhaps just a general comment. Firstly, welcome to France. There was a story in a newspaper you write for, written by one of the columnists. She said she had lunch with the CEO, recently appointed CEO. She asked him, how is it going? He said, oh, no, the figures are terrible, the staff are terrible, the company is terrible, the morale is terrible. And then she had lunch with him a couple of weeks later, and she said, how's it going? He said, no, staff are great, the turnover is great, profits are great, the business is great. I think the moral of the story is, and I think you epitomize this, is when you join a company, clearly you can't talk down, you've got to talk up. That is your function. So I understand where you're coming from. Thank you, Mr. Chatwood, coming to remind you on the plane. You had a good laugh.
Minister, I'm available for lunch.
This is a very weighty annual report, and I wonder if it's not a debt burden that made it so heavy in my case. It is, without doubt, a shocking set of results. I don't think there's anyone in the room that can agree with that. In fact, it's a qualified audit as well, with a 1.45 billion rand loss, which is 20% more than was predicted in the last information we received. So, you know, 250 million, that should be a big concern. The creditors' number of a billion rands, I think behind these credits, and when we just throw out numbers, we seem to forget that there are people, there are small enterprises, there are businesses that sit behind us. And I know, CEO, and this is not an attack on you, nothing I say here is directed at you. I know what your mandate is. Paul Trillivan, the man who did some artwork, well, I promised I would raise his name in this committee because he gets no response on the post office. He's completely ignored. It's a 6,000 rand book. He's an artist. He painted some art for some stamps which were printed. Highlighted the last annual report as a success of a socialist program, and the man has not been paid. 6,000 rand. An artist. I'm not sure what he's supposed to eat or how he's supposed to buy paint. In terms of human resource development, which is also highlighted quite comprehensively in the annual report, and the training and empowerment of people, part of that training program was a program designed to get post office employees to actually get their matric certificates, you know, which is a great program from every perspective. And there's a lady called Linda Phelan that operates exclusively in that area. She provided over 100,000 rands worth of training to get post office employees to do matric. She hasn't been paid for 18 months. And now she's struggling. These are two of those creditors that actually have a fate now behind that billion rand. I promise them quickly I will bring them before the Senate.
the chairperson knows, I've spoken to the chairperson, I've spoken to the minister, I'm now speaking again on behalf of these people. You made a very good impression, CEO, on Hot Branch. The comments were all positive about the Bryanston Post Office specifically, because you know in the village, when people jump up and down, people seem to pay more attention than they do in rural communities. That's another issue maybe we should address. The Bryanston Post Office, as you know, was running on generator power for a couple of weeks, but the landlord for months had shut off the power for non-payment. He then ended up locking the doors. There are still parcels and mail sitting in that post office undelivered from around December time. When in your presentation, and you, I can see in your presentation, you were talking about trust. And there's lots of talk about trust, trust from customers, trust from suppliers. How can the post office go and open up a set of post boxes and a post office up the road without checking the bills owed to the Bryanston Post Office first? If I have an overdraft at a bank that I don't pay, and I then go to another bank, open another overdraft, and lend more money from that bank, that, by any standard, that is completely unethical. You cannot do business like that and then expect trust to be given or trust to be re-earned. My view, it will never come back, that trust relationship will never come back.
Can I respond to the question of creditors generally? As a principal, sorry.
You wait for everything.
You must make notes, Mr. Bond, and then you can respond to the question individually. I laid criminal charges in October last year against previous directors of the Post Office for fraud and for contravention of the Companies Act. And this annual report I will hand over to the captain at the Statutes HQ in the Court, who is investigating it, because I think this just gives added weight to those charges. No director of state entity must play fast and loose with public and all with public entities. I found it interesting that SAA was used as a role model for initiative. In terms of what you call an investment memorandum, I'm not going to call it a bailout, I call it an investment memorandum. I know that our finance minister is under huge pressure, our country is under huge pressure to avoid a rating downgrade, which will in turn cost the company hundreds of millions more and just impact on delivery of services. So, phrasing this as an investment memorandum, to my view, what you're looking for is a bailout of a state-owned entity. And that has huge implications for our fiscus and for our country's economy. You know, when you talked about the national necessity, it sounds suspiciously like patriotism, you know, patriotism is a lot of refuge. What I would have liked to have seen from the Post Office is a plan to make the Post Office sustainable without resorting to government funding and, of course, without stealing from the creditors. In terms of depression, in terms of middle management vacancies, I know that SAFRA had a huge retrenchment. It's not a specific turnaround plan. Is Dr. Lishabi here? No, he didn't give an apology. Dr. Lishabi, he didn't apologize. He did not. Rereading his turnaround plan. In terms of that turnaround plan, there were vast retrenchments, you know, rationalization, downsizing across all SAFRA departments. The Auditor General and Secretary Acting CFO identified, and you did, identified middle management agencies. Can you give us an idea of the size, the number of people involved in that, and when you could set about filling those vacancies, and any idea of the costs around this? In terms of cash constraints, I looked at the presentation, and certainly for the profit and loss, and for your statement of cash flows and your statement of financial position, the trend is not your friend. It's looking very poor indeed. I understand, as you've mentioned, in terms of this trend, it did lie to the strategic turnaround plan that was tabled by Dr. Scholler, that said this financial year ending in February, the Post Office would post 120 million rand profits, and then the following year it would post 1.2 billion rand profits. Great numbers, and Parliament approved that strategic turnaround plan. Has that changed? We can see in the year, in February, that has changed. But going forward, what is, I
actually in your presentation you said by 2018, June financial year, you would turn it around. Can you give us an idea of what kind of numbers you're looking at? How committed are you to those numbers, Mr. Barnes? Do you pay back the money if you don't get those numbers? You don't have to answer. You don't have to answer. Then, if you take and the first bank, and well, I'm acting CEO or CFO of the first bank. You know, you've got an IT organization there, healthy deposit, and customers being quite happy with the service they get from that organization. If you strip the post bank out of the South African post office, which is what you want to do by commercializing it, by going that route, you take it out of the post office. Do you still have a business in the post? Do you have a going concern? Do you have a business now that you can put on that and say, yes, it's a going concern, yes, it's sustainable? Because I imagine, I'm just looking at the figures, they would be absolutely horrendous. And, you know, any company in that position would have to close down. So perhaps it's in your interest to, in fact, keep a post bank within South. Specifically to you, I can see it's your statement of comprehensive income, your interest paid, your finance income, 1.58 billion, so primarily the results of interest on deposit funds. Then the interest paid was for depositors, as well as overdrafts. If you have a split of that number, so we know how much interest is paid to depositors and to overdrafts, I'm trying to get an idea of how profitable the finance income is for that. But it's too late now. When do we get stuff in front of the committee, chairperson? And you know, there's a lot of stuff that we need, and this is big news. I've only got 3 pages. No, I'm calling you nurse, so maybe I know something. I've got just 3 more questions. Excuse me? There's another chairperson behind. You see, everybody's moving up the ladder. All right, let me cut it short. You mentioned the pensions and social grants being paid out through the post office. I presume the reason, I don't know exactly, but what is the reason why the private sector is being contracted to do this? I would imagine it's reliability. You can't leave old age pension payments. So does the post office really believe that they're in a position to constantly offer that service, given the disruptions that we've had over the years? And lastly, I'll come for round 2 on annual report. In terms of Cape Mail and the International Mail Centre, I visited the International Mail Centre myself, and there were literally machinery with conveyor belts with millions of rands that weren't moving, and there were, you know, people shifting parcels very slowly, and there were very few people working at the time. I'd be interested to hear your comments on how you would educate that machinery moving again. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, I just restored now. Is that better?
Would you like me to start again, folks?
Okay, I presume you've got it all, Minister.
Thank you, sir. I'll come back around to you.
Okay, on that one, then, yes.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, my colleagues. Thank you for the report we give us, but I have some few questions. Not the pages. Okay. So you have a contract with government department. How long are these contracts running? And the departments are paying on time? The second one, can you please tell us the nature of the contract between NUSAPO and the communication department? I'm not quite sure. There's a best report of AG, and it's not nice. I don't know whether the SAPO has an audit and risk committee. If they have, is it working? I'm not quite sure. According to what I see,
myself. I'm not quite sure. You have the number of, your number of annual performance indicators of 21. You achieved only 3. It's not a good story to tell. Serious. And can you please, I don't know whether you're going to explain or you're going to give us an idea what's going on. How far? I know it's a long time, but at least we have a board, we have a staff, but I think there's must be something done so far. I don't know what's going on. I'm not quite sure. According to AG's report in properties, some items are not recorded. Some are recorded, but not in asset register. Can you please give us an idea of what's going on that? The last one, sorry. There's a report from SIU. I'm sure ministers have represented the report from SAPO, board members, and management. Can you please give us the progress has been made by SAPO board and management implementing recommendations?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chairperson. I think in some cases, SAPO and the CEO will probably have to respond in a sort of in a way to address different focuses of questions, but all in one. But just to start off by saying thank you very much for the presentation. I think from the understanding that was presented by the CFO, it was clear that First Bank and its depositors' money are ring-fenced, and therefore the sooner the corporatization can take place, the better. So because it's in any case not for the post bank to dip into, for the post office to dip into post bank depositors. Chairperson, then I would like to come to the issue of the universal service application. In previous years, we have in fact cautioned that these obligations are nothing but unfunded mandates, because every year there are new expectations, there are new, and in many respects, it's actually very unrealistic. Because to have a point of presence does not always mean you need to own the property, first of all, and all of that. And I don't think there was very good management of that. Also, there was not proper engagement. And I'm happy that CFO explained that they have renegotiated, but according to the strategic plan, it was not, in fact, it was part of that, that it did not meet those strategic goals. So how would you move from here as far as universal service obligation are concerned? Are you going to engage further with ICASA so that there can be realistic targets set? Also, due to the nature, of the business, for instance, you don't necessarily need to have a specific post office, but you could share facilities, government facilities, etc. And are we looking at those models to curtail costs? Then I would like to address the issue of, for lack of a better description, the looting that took place during the past financial year. Now, obviously we need to caution that some of it is unauthorized and some of it is irregular. And I would like to support the grid CEO, where he says he is in fact going to chase those individuals mercilessly, because it is evident that there was a double up on those irregular and unauthorized expenditure in the past financial year compared to the previous financial year. If we look at the annual report, it is actually really very disconcerting. So we are awaiting further detail of how they will act to it, but I'm happy that he at least gave his commitment. Then the issue of the organizational structure and consequent management. You see, Chairperson, if you look at the organization, and obviously a lot of it goes down to what the Auditor General's office said, lack of strategic leadership and direction. In the end, you also need the systems in place, and they must be working effectively. Those in charge of the systems must be working. So consequence management, lack of performance, must in fact meet with action taken against those individuals. Unfortunately, it's one of those things you can direct people, but in the end, you also need to take action. Make sure that everybody is doing their level of space and in fact deserves whatever packages they are receiving. This is one of those instances. You know, if you look at the budget that will be presented tomorrow, I mean, it is evident that in 40% of cases in the public sector, people are earning better salaries than in the private sector, contrary to what many people believe. So we need to get our pound of flesh in the public sector for people who are working there. And I'm concerned, how will the necessary management and performance management system be introduced? And is there negotiation and further discussion with unions regarding that? Because it is a growing concern that is at risk if we don't turn the organizational culture around. As far as property and plant is concerned, I'm very happy to hear noises that we don't need to necessarily own property, because the state is notoriously bad with property management as well as maintenance of such property. So that would in fact be a good position that we will find ourselves in. And then lastly, it is clear that I agree with what the CEO said about the nature of the beast. It is outdated. It is not in tune with international trends. It must restructure its primary business. But in order to do that, it needs, as an interim measure, at least, good government business. Now, engagement with, I don't know if the minister is going to answer that question, if we're going to get the confidence to stop, because the government will have to start to give the post office government business. I see also the Communication Workers Union is also making certain demands. I believe they're going to have some protest action here tomorrow at Parliament about this matter. But are there any discussions taking place? And are we making progress as far as that is concerned? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think colleagues, mainly you can know most of the colleagues were speaking not even on to the detail of the annual report. And you would understand that because of the nature of both of you and the challenges that we experience, and that's what you can hear, the sentiments, and that's the report, subcommittee chairs, the sentiments of even the level of discourtesy, or the distrust of the information that is before us. Firstly, is our concern around the figures, because we've had a lot of figures put in front of us. We go back, we find the figures are not correct. Secondly, is the issue of document output. The CEO today is talking about investment, what did you call it? Memorandum. In fact, turnaround strategy. And I'm raising this point so that you understand that we do oversight on the basis of the information that is provided before us. That's how we do oversight. Now, what you give us becomes what you use to oversee your work. Yeah, there are board chapters that the committee chapters are different. So now, when we give that information, we give us that information, we use it as a tool to do oversight. So the accuracy of that information is critical for us. And the consistency of accounting against that document. So you don't present a strategic plan, for example, that says 1, 2, 3. Then you account going to left. It makes our lives difficult. I look at a presentation. It's good that there is focus on getting that financial stability. But the operations has to happen. Look at the Auditor General's report.
about even the existing policies. I think we raised this, I don't know how many times we raised this with post office. Get your policies in place. Get your standard operating procedures in place. That basic thing. Now, for me, it comes to like when CEO, I hear you are projecting a company with good employees wanting to work. But arrival of employees at work means nothing if the output of employees cannot translate to the work that you want to see. If HR team can arrive at work, but you can't find development of policies, simple things, development of policies, development of standard operating procedures, then it becomes a problem for me. So that's what I'm concerned for. Especially for people to arrive and work, and if there is no work, consequences. The challenge we have with post office that we have, both from the board level and executive, would be that if you do not have performance plans for individual employees, how are you going to hold them accountable and ensure that your targets are met? You sit with the percentage that you are sitting with. Because if, unless you reach a point where individual as an employee of post office, I know when I arrive at work, this is my work plan, or this is my performance as a manager, including making sure that middle management level takes accountability and the work that is being done. Now, people can't get that. I'm trying to sit here and understand, and I look at the annual report. If I can't get that from sitting here, it's concerning, because you're going to get money injected. You come and honest McKenzie will tell you pay back the money. This is what we raised when the SCP was presented to us. And if colleagues, I know most of you are not here, but Minister would remember at that time we would say, we are concerned even as the portfolio committee give our support for a bailout process. Because we felt that we'd be throwing money to a moving vehicle. Because we couldn't find, or we couldn't find comfort that there are systems in place to be able to say, when you get the money, it will translate to the output that you want. So that's the basis. You get your staff to do what they're expected to do. You get your systems to be in place. So that whatever that comes into an operation that can be able to sustain and run effectively. Well, the question I would ask is that you've been receiving some money currently. The guarantee study has been written, and I hear you want to go and get it. But have we seen impact done by that money? What is the money meant for, and what is it going to do currently? Are we using it to run operations? Because if you use the money that you are requesting from government for our operation, we'll never have a viable business, because we are not investing in anything that will bring revenue in the future. So those are the things that I would really like to get comfort from the team that is here to do. But when we are getting the systems in place, we are clear on where we get the money, where is it going to, where is it going. Because I remember when we raised the concerns, and colleagues might remember, most of you were in the meeting of October, where it was certainly when we were at the post office. And we were making the concerns around the unreliability of the financial figure, but constantly asking put in front of us. But we started when the SEC was there, we said, we are concerned that these figures are not realistic and will not be able to produce the results that we are getting. As this, because this is when we were expecting to start to see Mr. Bank, we were told that we'll start seeing improvement when we were given that turnaround together with the annual plan. Now, today we are sitting, we are looking at this, we are saying to us, no, there's hope. We are putting things in place. We see the implementation, and we see things improving in 2018. So you need to understand where we are sitting as the portfolio committee responsible for oversight. What is that is going to give a comfort now. But what you are telling us is going to happen in 2018. Because I need the comfort. We need the comfort of the committee. The board chairperson, who was the administrator, was here. He asked the question. He emphasized the importance. He answered to understand what he said. We were assured that this is correct. Now, we understand the historical issue, and which is another thing, because where I'm sitting, yes, some of the colleagues would have left, but majority of the workforce is the profit. Still there. But has been the decline of this institution. Now, one of the challenges is for this board to ensure that the culture turns into that profit. Because you can get stability, you get a financial injection. 2 months down the line, there's an industrial action to shut you down. Now, we are around the issue of labor forum or employment equity forum. I'm looking at the REM project because there's I'm looking at the wrong direction. Because those are the issues that ensure the stability of positive. But we do not get the thing of it. But where I'm sitting, I'm not comfortable that we not have any information. The emails I get every day from union does not satisfy. But you get a sense of unhappy level management. There's this thing called TCC. TCC, something like that. Where you have almost your managers very unhappy. Because the principle of equal pay, equal work, is said not to be attached. These are the people we need as a workforce to assist you to move forward. You note I'm also not really going into detail. I've literally marked this fact. I think we should utilize this session as a platform while we're looking at the accountability of the financial year, but to say how we assist to move forward to be able to ensure that we do not have the same situation. When I get a call from journalists about positives, I must tell you, I cringe at them when they call me and say positives, because I get worried. You worry whether employees are being paid, you worry whether if the creditor that is attempting to go to court or the union likely to go on a strike. Now, you can count months without a strike. You can count here the positive ways that are coming. One of the issues that we accept that entity is the fact that there is a need for government to assist. And I think we have said previously that we support it. But we want stringent measures to ensure that the money that comes in is going to be what is supposed to be. But it's going to capital investment to be able to ensure that work is being done. That's why I asked when the colleagues from HS office asked whether you guys have those at no, the parliament utilized or actually some of the future. If you have FAP set, after 25, there's a motion set. So I don't understand why post office can't have aggregated. Is it because you do not have the people that know how to use the system that people are not using? Those are just, I'm just concerned for you, because these are basic things that get an organization for us. Somebody should be sitting working on that. It's the system that is there, that you capture your assets and everything. You have, even on the issues of property, I'm not sure why post office has problems with property when you have property companies. I'm wrong. You have property companies, isn't it? Why are we settling to know where our assets are? We asked about the abundant losses, Mr. Bang, with your predecessor. Wanted to understand what is the plan. Also, that's why I repeat, I'm happy when the chair of the board is not here, because this is a person who has historic issues. And most of the colleagues who are here would have lied. I'm not so sure they've been, but I hope you can assist us. I want to understand what is the plan in terms of your property, especially those that are owned by post office that you have abandoned. We have raised this with the board. We want to understand the plan. The second issue we had asked was around the eco-building. We asked, I think this was a meeting in 2014, not even 2015, when we first said to the executive and to the board, go, I think it was administration, go look at this eco-building contract. Is it sustainable? Do we need to continue? What are the consequences? Either way. And let us know. I'm just taking the things that we have requested. The Echo Point, not Echo Park, Echo Point. We raised issues around CSG and Joseph. He said the business, especially at that time, he said CFG, because we had not dealt much with Joseph at that time. But because the report before us had said to us, CFG is not viable. We got problems. And we asked the board to go and look at it and give us a report. So these are the reports, colleagues, that we are expecting today. What is the position of the board on CFG? What is the position of the board on abandoned buildings? What is the position of the board on Eco Point? Indeed, colleagues would say at that time we were told that there is a possibility of retrenchment. Is that an abandoned project? So, these are just basic things that need to be reported for us to understand and assist. And colleagues who are chairpersons of subcommittees, these are part of the issues why we ask you to be here. Because we think it will assist us when we interact with you as chairpersons so that we are able to process the things, because the response time and level of this information from one speech, I'm not comfortable that it's getting to them. The message is that you should write it in a correct way. Because if you are to resolve some of this, you should ask this question. We've done oversight, and I hope colleagues take time to read our oversight report. We are in the board and committee. We've been just to share with colleagues, we've been to post office where. And I think we raised it with the board. How the structure of post office is, in a normal business, when or in a normal bank, I've worked in a bank. So in a normal bank, you have a branch manager responsible for everything that happens in that bank. Not with post office. Post office, you have you go to a branch, the retailer that operates, the person who's running this branch doesn't know what happens in the main list. So you have people who are reporting somewhere in a region of somebody who doesn't even visit this branch that are supposed to deliver a name. Now what I'm saying, in a normal business, you have synchronized that. Now our expectation is that as you do the viable business and reposition and change this sort of it to work, those are some of the basic things that you get wages. But if I am a branch manager now, I must know that mail is going. You do not have a situation where in transit you sit with 7 months without mail to deliver. But it's sitting somewhere central
is in fact it's not pushing, it's not moving to a recipient. Because you are a person responsible at that level, lower level, to take responsibility, there's a responsibility. And you find good case studies. I mean, there's a branch we went to in Poluan, you know, in Limpopo, what is that area? Beggars for Tribe. I must remember the name of that. It's in our report. We had a branch manager brilliantly understanding what the branch needs to do, how. And that person, out of their own initiative, have gone beyond what post offices required as their job description, but to go beyond and do other areas which is not within their job description, to make sure that mail is delivered, make sure that their services are ready. It was one of the busiest post offices that we found. I mean, we wondered the fact we found huge things, but they were in such a manner that they understand this is going out, your home choice out, and all those things. And could even tell you this is how we don't have things, but we kept records of the things. Now, if we are to talk about turnaround in the post office, we should be able to say this is the best model of the post office that is currently working. This is the one that is not working. And therefore, this is how we are resolving going forward. Now, my frustration and the frustration of the committee is to see this post office since 2014. And we reach out, re-agitate the same thing. We talk about the same thing every day. Can we get just the basic needs? We get the post office running efficiency and business. Relook, Mr. Banks, in terms of your operation. Get the site that deals with posters. But with those that are to retain, because they seem not to be putting together. This thing of postal agents. But at times their sheets are missing because I wrote my time sheet that I work this hour and all that. And they take some time without being paid. You let some of them and all those things. Now, those are the stories that we know of post office as members of parliament when we interview them. We would not base our experiences on the post statistics. Because our responsibility is oversight. Is to listen to what you say to us and to go and see for ourselves whether what you have said to us correlates with what you have given to us. Now, at some point and at certain point, we find the disjunction. And I just want comfort that we are moving from that premise of having this information and all that. I think I'm comforted. I haven't received a call from any story that they've received directly that not taking stage, because those are some of the things that get. And you must remember, post office by nature of where it is, your workers are in our community, are in our constituency. So, like Honorable Ketabate has written the uptime about the constituency issue, she arrived in the Eastern Cape and she found Labour not moving, Honourable James. Honourable James is looking up for creditors as well. They talk to us because they know us from our community. Unlike other entities who are in an unfortunate position. I have workers of post office actually sometimes voting to my mother's house. Those are some of the things. They share experiences. Now, to the board, it will assist as well, but it will receive it. I do that. I simply walk as I pass wherever I am in a province in my own city, it passed by a particular post office. And you get a really true sense of what post office is about. You need to find workers who are committed, who are willing to work, who believe in post office. But equally find those who just, they've been there in the city. And that's but in Bawamalu, an uncle says, government, I'm here. Government never gets rid of people. So, I'm just echoing the sentiment, colleagues, because we're trying to ask this from where we are putting. While we are also expecting some level of responsibility, consequences, and accountability. Can't be that things do not happen. There's no consequence management. Reports will be out of investigation and everything. We want to understand what is it that you are doing for this.
let them not talk them to the audit services. Writing reports that at night is not on our system. Because we'll get the agency's office. That will paint it. Now, what it does is dent the credibility of the subcommittee. That's what happened. What we want to see is the system where you say to us, this is what is not working, and this is what we have advised for this to happen. But at least, and because you are a boss, if a creative does not do what is being recommended, you can't be helpless as a boss. You have responsibility. Executive must understand you do what is expected, or you get out of the door. You get the right person to do the work. It's simple as that. Because if that does not happen, you do not do that. You will ask the minister to say, this body is not prepared to do what it's supposed to happen, therefore, can they get out of the door? And you get the right people to do the right job. It's fast. So that's why I always say we are an easy committee, because we simply say to everybody, do what is expected of you to do. We will all be fine. Because if I do not ensure that this committee does oversight, Parliament, because we do this work on behalf of the entire national assembly, they can simply say, Chairperson and your members, because you are not willing to do what is expected, we'll get another committee, we'll get another chair for people who are able to do oversight based on the constitution. So it's as simple as that. All of us, in our respective responsibilities, let's do our work. The comments and the work and the issues we raise as committees are not meant to just be an interaction that we just have to go through. The issues that are raised by the AG are not to be in a document to go home. I note that you will be appearing before court as post office. It's one of the things that I always say we avoid doing as entities. Now, you get to scope them, it's another different issue. So we just need to make sure that what is raised by the agent's office, not only acting CEO, CFO, you don't say this is what is raised by the agent. You say this is what is raised and this is what we have done to resolve it. Because agent will tell us, the agent's office will tell us, the team will tell us what they have raised with you. What we want from you is to say to us, this is how we are addressing this issue. And track them down constantly as we meet in the to put them down, because we do not want to see them next time. They actually were quite open to say the issues of irregular, not future, irregular extension, because of the nature of the environment, we were not able to get the contract out on hand because of no money. We were to rely on creditors. So they have appealed on your behalf. So there's not been improvement. But the issue is going forward, once the procurement process is accepted, we'll have to address it. So that we clean out the irregular expenditure, we clean out the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Currently, we understand the irregular, not the wasteful. We understand the irregular because of the issues of cash flow, but we have to rely on the current service providers because they understand that we're not even on time. Which actually is not right, I mean, this are intimate issues. But you understand the problem. Now, once we sort of this thing, it's going to be important for us to do this. So I thought it's important that one guy read a bit from the old way of going into pages and doing this, because we really want to see this entity heading out. We want to see this entity doing better. The picture, when are you appointing the remaining register? We can't be this long. You need capacity in the entity to assist us.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. The issues related to the CFO were only finalized last week. They are finalized.
So what is the finalized means?
We've been able to agree with the we've agreed for her to leave the meeting. So that we will...
that's another thing.
In terms of the settlement for the previous CFO, the previous CFO's contract had 12 months remaining. What we settled on was a 9-month payment of the outstanding period, and that's related to an amount of 178,000.
Why did post office settle? What
motivated
the settlement instead of
concluding the 16-month procedure? We've been sorry, just deadlines. I did not put it right. It was 1.4 million, sorry. The 1.7 was the gross amount. So, 1.4 million. And I just made a mistake there. Because it's composed of statutory leave, it's composed of the outstanding amount of the contract. And the amount that I mentioned first was the statutory leave amount, but I just didn't see all of this correctly. On the question of why did the organization settle, part of the issues around the secondary process was because of the financial situation of the organization. The hearings were postponed on numerous occasions because we could not pay the external chairperson and we could not pay the transcriber. Resulted in was that the cost of conducting the actual disciplinary process and the time period of the disciplinary process was dragging on, and we could not contain those costs. And when we looked at a cost-benefit analysis in terms of if this continues on, we would still be paying the individual for the period, as well as most probably when we looked at some of the witnesses and the evidence that they were leaving, we started to see that although the merit of the case was good, but because of another issue in terms of the witnesses, we could not get all the right witnesses, and they were also starting to be hostile witnesses, and we then had to take a decision in terms of whether we continue with the process and incur further costs, or whether we try and curtail the cost and and ensure that the cost is within what would have paid the person for the duration of her contract.
Is that money that in the process of the hearing, or how did you get into it? So the wasteful expenditure. You started an inquiry, you ran for months paying this person's salary. Almost after a year of the hearing process, you settled. That does not make sense. Just not. I'm not sure how to explain it.
Chair, can I intervene here? Circumstances surrounding this prolonged debate were presented to me, and it became clear to me that for the process to continue, our grounds for successful disciplinary action were getting weaker and weaker, and the costs of running the process on were actually in excess of the settlement amount that we could have agreed. So we were just continuing down a path which had no chance of success, and we were costing more money than we could if we settled. It was my considered view that we should settle and move on, and I signed the contract last week. Thank you.
There are two things, Mr. Bunsen, in terms of accountability and peer to me. It's the issue that where there is wrongdoing, that there must be consequences, which I have a problem with. Now, the individual has been let off without accountability. Let me finish. Without accountability. That's the first thing. The second thing is that this matter has been let off for months. I mean, part of the problem where we are, she's part of the problem. As the CFO. Because I remember there was a meeting which was even declaring subsidies of that's why he post office ended up in the list that they are. Now, you come and tell us that we must accept that this person must just go. It's a consequence of the wrong doing. Because it's not only views of the money.
but it's the culture of ensuring that there's accountability for wrongdoing within the state, which we seem to lack most of the time.
Thank you, Chair. I was made aware when I arrived at the organisation how long this was being going on for and that we needed to bring it to a head, and your points are valid about consequences. In light of that, we took legal advice as to the likelihood of our success in pursuing, and we got strong and convincing legal advice that we wouldn't win our case. And in that circumstance, the case moved from being a disciplinary failure to a financial pragmatic solution. And it's on that advice that we acted. Our legal advice is that we wouldn't win the case.
It made me encourage the commentary of last year, late up year, the issue of settlement was brought. Our approach has been to that they must finalize the disciplinary hearing as quick as possible. And if settlement, must be settlement that we did with former CEO, we leave, we don't reward you. That's our approach. Then what came after the matter was that, as one of the officials said, we were told the people who are actually conducting this disciplinary hearing, because we are forced, we didn't have the capacity to conduct just a hearing. Because we are forced, they were not doing it because we're owing the money because of the financial situation. Then we're also presented with legal costs, which were spiraling in relation to this upward thing. It wasn't that saying that while we said we'll accept the settlement, but they must bring it as down as possible. Because I fully agree with the chair, it does. The charge is serious. It's not true that we didn't have a case. We had a serious case because of the financial constraint and our process. We started putting problems in the management of the process. Normally, in any ad organization, there should not be decisions take more than 3 months. This disciplinary process, I think, started in April. Okay. It was just dragging and dragging and dragging and dragging from both sides, both from SAPO side, because they avoided those representatives, and from the accused set aside. So it's unfortunate, Chairman, but then we're told it's a common practice which we are worried. It happened also in my own department. We were told, no, it's cheaper. It's cheaper to just settle and get rid of this. The processes of disciplinary holy. I think the policies and the personnel to conduct these things, I think we need to create that capacity. If we don't do that, we'll end up opposing and having this lengthy disciplinary hearing. You must remember, if you employ me as a private lawyer, I get money every time I come into the hearing. So it's a moral hazard thing that I'll tend to postpone it as long as you pay me. So that's the situation. I think the new board has to look in their internal policy, how they improve this situation. I thought I should just add that that we said to the board, the year time cycle by trying to bring it as low as possible. If I remember, I'm sorry, we said maybe maximum 3 months. That was our advice and the credit. But we take note of that. The main concern for us from the beginning was that the incumbent, the then incumbent, was incompetent and was not really performing according to duty. The first thing we then were told, the performance contract was not signed. And in terms of the staff act and their memorandum of the MOI, every senior executive, the chief CEO must sign performance contract. It's a must. And it's not optional. that the argument was that, no, she submitted to the previous CEO who didn't respond. But it was responsibility of the employee to have a signed performance contract. You can't say your duty just to submit. I thought I should just give some of those backgrounds, because to me, that was a dereliction of the duty if you operate at that level without a performance contract. Sorry. Yes, we inherit assets and liabilities, I'm the higher up as a executive officer, but I thought I should not give that thing as a person. Tell me now, if we work under the bridge, but what will urge the post office to avoid this thing of wasting money, say, so conducting disciplinary process and keep on dragging it, and say that it doesn't help, it doesn't. I fully agree with Shepard, and it doesn't bring the culture. I think most of the members have been talking about this culture of impunity, no care. They're just there, working, whether we work or not, it doesn't matter. And he had to start with the senior management. Maybe when they are responding to some of the questions, they'll say what measures are they putting in place. I've heard the new CEO talking about 10 commandments. I'm not sure if they said it here. We call it bad commandment. That's about saying it's welcome. But they are just a bit critical. So that is a recommendation that we really have to avoid those type of things. But they cost money. I don't have the figures, but the figures of the legal cost of that thing were quite significant. It was one of the things which, when we people are waiting so much, and these people are not even prepared to do the thing properly for us. Maybe we should consider this assessment. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Ms. I think it speaks back to the issues of policy. But I want to say here, there's no way we can support the assessment. It's just not, there's no way. You have no support from us on this. There is no way. That's just a principle matter, not matter. You wrote questions and questioned to the minister about the previous settlement. So you must be careful, because I'm going to pull your comments and your statement about it. Your media statement on the settlement. I'm going to pull it and read it word by word.
There's some clarity. Based on the information given me, I would support the settlement, but I would say that it's such a pity we do not have a register of the kind of officials that they do not get employed by another set of entities, like pop up at SAA or FNC or some water board or something. That
3 months settlement would have been acceptable. Beyond 9 months, no. That's just over. I think Minister knows, because we've had this discussion when we were talking about the CEO settlement at that time. The consistency, that's what applies as a principle. You can't be flexible about principles. It's just principles are principles. No matter how you are convinced, they remain principles, honorable. You can't be flexible about them. No, they are. On this one, on the committee's work, there is principles. I think let allow for the responses to come through on the issues that were raised and needed to respond to. Maybe while we are at it, and just check with all other executive members to find the performance contract. Continue with the CEO.
Yes, please.
First, I've signed my employment contract, and I haven't agreed the performance contract yet. And, we don't have a CEO yet, so they certainly haven't signed their performance contract. But it is a requirement, and I have a timetable that the chairman handed down to me to do so within, I think I've got another month. So I've been instructed, and it will happen.
When you come to your strategic plan process, and I hope you submit on time, the strategic plan, so we'll start the level performance contract.
Just to confirm, I do have a signed performance contract. I had got had one assistant CFO, and I had an approved contract while I was acting as CFO as well.
Responses on the issues raised?
Thank you, Chairperson. I will not go through the... I will not answer each and every question. I think I've noted a number of questions that have been raised. Starting from the presentation by the Auditor General, I think the environment we inherited had a lot of risk that's not managed and control that's not happened. And we have engaged with the core of the combined assurance grouping, which will include the internal ones and external ones, to make sure that we tighten the environment. And hence, there's a lot of things that we are doing. One of the things we agreed upon, which was delayed, was to have a risk workshop between the executive, the management, and also the board, so that we can rehash and refresh the strategic risk register. Unfortunately, that was delayed, but it's going to be happening very soon. And when the AG issue is audit outcomes, we're going to make sure that we would have an audit outcomes workshop. One of the problems the AG were experiencing was lack of adequate and meaningful management commentary on the outcomes of the audit coming through. Some of them, they did not even address the deficiencies that's been identified by the AG. And we agreed that before the AG issues its report, they would have an audit outcomes workshop, which has been welcomed. We have continued to support the combined assurance management team, and it includes the risk units, the AG, the internal auditors, and also management, where they discuss the things that relates to them, four things, the risk issues, the audit outcome issues, predetermined objectives issues, and also the issue of contracts. And we've taken that as a line item in the Audit and Risk Committee, say each and every management must be accountable. In the past, Chairperson, what happened is that the assurance providers were made to account for such things, which is wrong. An assurance provider is meant to come in there, do his review, and then tell you where you're coming wrong, and then you must count. So we've changed that. Now executives responsible for their areas, they will account for those four things when it comes to ARC. So that we can check these things and take the steam away from the assurance providers. The assurance providers are feeling a lot of heat, unnecessarily so. Some of the things that came out in the FIU report due to the acquisition of the CCTV cameras was the cleanup of the SAPO supply database. We've had meetings with the SIU and Service Africa, and all these recommendations that we should clean up our database. We've spoken with Mark Barnes to start the process of making sure that every single supplier reapply to be in the database. Now, why are we doing that? We find that we've got 16 suppliers. Suppliers are using the same VAT number, for instance. They're sharing the same business address, etc. So we're trying to make sure that we've got proper suppliers, VAT suppliers trading with SAPO. The issue of evergreens is something that was also rehashed. It's also a line item in our Audit and Risk Committee meeting. We are looking into those items and are holding executives responsible for their contracts. Now, It was common, Chairperson, at SAPO for management to just take away their role to people that are assurance providers. So the head of supply chain was deemed as the person who should know when a particular contract is expiring, which is the wrong way around. If I'm hiring SAP to come and do something for me, and I'm the head of properties, for instance, and quality asset module, I should know when the contract is coming to an end, and I should renew that contract. The supply chain units are a staging component of SAPO. They're not owners of the particular system. So we're changing this responsibility matrix that we found in SAPO. One of the things that came up as well, Chairperson, is that somehow management on those evergreens, they found a way in SAP to pay for contracts that had expired. So they would create a manual order so that it could be processed through the system. And we identified this, and we actually instructed them to close the scope and make sure it doesn't happen again. And anyone who continues this practice obviously will have to deal with it very, very harshly, because you cannot, as management, find a way to still rob the system because you still want to continue with a particular service provider. And this is one of the things that's also highlighted at the SIU, Chairperson. Chairperson, you mentioned the issue around investment. When the money comes, where is it coming to? One of the things we identified within the IT is that which has a huge ballpark figure of about 600 million rand, and we asked what is the sunk cost and what is a revenue-generating investment. Because you find that IT is an enabler, they have to enable various businesses. Digital mail, they have to enable a lot of businesses. And in there, they need to make sure that they acquire some assets to fund those businesses, business operating models, so that they generate revenue. And that has been done, Shepherdson. I'm very happy to report just on a few of them. A trust center. Trust center, they issue digital certificates. And all that they needed to do was to do a pre-audit, so that the pre-audit can qualify them to be able to move to the next tier, so that they can start issuing digital certificates. Now, that's a cash cow for SAPO. I mean, that's a no-brainer. The multi-port functional devices that need to go out there to our post offices, so we can be at par with the likes of Postnets. The network monitoring tools, so that we can detect before the network goes down. Because currently, the way the network is structured for SAPO around the country is that there's one window of size. So if somewhere in heritage the line breaks down, we lose KZN. When we lose KZN, we lose all customers in KZN. They come to the post office, and the post office is shut. Systems don't work, except the other. So we're moving away from that particular network configuration. We moved into a network configuration where there's a couple of redundancies built into our network, so that at any point in time, these things are managed, and people are able to access our systems. EMV upgrades are going to be critical for Postbank. So I'm just mentioning some of the things, Shepherdson, that should keep you comfortable, that money will come to well thought and well critiqued investment in the IT space to support the business of SAPO. We had a disagreement as the Audit and Risk Committee with the AG around the issue of deferred tax assets. But after engaging with the AG, we did realize that the losses that we have been carrying does not justify us carrying the deferred tax assets. So in other words, the utilization of these deferred tax assets will not come through anytime soon. So we need to agree to do away with the assets. As soon as the corporate plan, Mark Barnes, is going to be presented, he's going to hopefully, I think, on 2017, 2018, it will start turning some benefits, and we'll start realizing that deferred assets back into our numbers. In terms of the SIU report, Chairperson, the report that I can give you is very, I think, comforting on our front, starting on the eco point. The board, other meetings was started, the board obviously had to make certain deliberations and conclude on what the advice given by the SIU. The first one is we're going to be a core applicant. We're going to become a core applicant with the SIU to nullify the eco point lease. Now, we can't get out, as much as you have questioned the validity of the eco point lease, we can't get out of the eco point lease until it is nullified by a court of law. So we can't even stop the payment of rentals to Miss the Chinese landlord. We can't even get out of the situation right now. But what we commissioned is that for management to ask our funds to look for alternative accommodation or options around where we can go. We can go back to where we were or go to another location, etc., etc., etc. I know some ideas have been thrown around as to why can't we use a third of what we're using at Eco Point. But I think, you know, if you're going to identify my lease and I'm your landlord, what's the chance of you hanging around my property, you know? So from that perspective, how we've addressed the couple, we're going to become co-applicants. What that means as well is, on other issues relating to the other feature units, the SHS commercial crimes units, we're going to be part and parcel of those activities in recovering some of the assets for people that deploy the trouble. So coming to the next point of CCTV and acquiring of CCTV cameras, I'm just going to touch on the key areas we discussed in the directory of urgency to the SAPO board. Acquiring of CCTV cameras was something that was done illegally because the service provider did not obviously comply with federal law. And the responsible individual within SAP management, we've asked Antia and Mark to initiate disciplinary hearings and go through the disciplinary process. One of the things also highlighted was the immediate superior of the person who transgressed these laws also was in defiance. He was not willing to discipline the individual who broke these laws. So we've asked Mark and Antia to deal with both of them. to discipline both of them so that we can move away with this. But in cleaning up our database, when all these six providers come back to re-register, we'll make them sign what we call a general GCC, general contracting terms, conditions, so that immediately when we don't deliver, we enlist them with the National Treasury database of defaulters. And that's going to be a must for each and every service provider who comes back. In terms of Care Circle, there was a limited bidding process that was approved by management back at the time, and all of them are gone except for one person who is our current chief audit executive. And we've instructed Mark and Abia to start the disciplinary process. But that is the result of the financial expenditure of 15 million. The CFC stamping machine that is underutilized at Cape Mail, we've asked Mark to just get it shipped to Durban because Durban CFC stamping machine does not work. We as a board took the advice from the minister to actually hold our meeting in Durban so that we could see for ourselves, walk the floors and actually see what's happening on the ground. And this was an eye-opening experience. And as you said, I also did the same thing. I just walked to any post office wherever I am and I just asked basic questions. And so we gained a lot through that, and we identified that one of the machines, CFC machine, wasn't working. Coincidentally, is one in Cape Town that's been underutilized, so we'll ask that to be shipped back. I just want to talk about, lastly, the issue of properties. From an IT perspective, we found a culture where there is no data ownership. There is absolutely no data ownership culture within SAPO. So every month, we said we needed to start a culture whereby people are accountable for their data. They sign off on their data, the accuracy, the validity, the completeness of their data. So the reason why SAP is underutilized when it comes to that, one of the contributing factors is lack of data ownership. And that's what we're going to be starting. We've asked SAPO to draft the policy, the CIO, to draft the policy on data ownership, so we can start holding people accountable for their own data. So if you're looking at data, data is going to be your baby, and you're going to sign it off every single month. That data is clean, it's valid, and it's complete. I think that's going to be very important. And then also we're going to start training the system or the system owners. My last comment, Chairperson, is SAPO may be facing terminal illness, maybe facing terminal illness, but it does not mean we must stop washing our bodies and cleaning our teeth. I just want to make that point very clear, Chairperson, because as much as we have to prioritize for funding, everyone is overtaking each other if we need to get these billions in. We must not stop washing our bodies and cleaning our teeth, because the moment that those billions come in, guess what? We have been infected by other things because our bodies were just left uncleaned. Our teeth were also not being cleaned. So it's very important that the moral of the story is, as much as we need to go and get funding, issues of governance must continue. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. You see, stamps are no longer popular, so I only have one question. I just want to deal with the question raised by Honourable McKenzie. I may not necessarily be responding to a specific person that you have referred to. But this is what we found in the space called the We were told as the STEM Advisory Committee that don't follow procurement or supply chain processes where they appoint STEM designers. So what they do, they just feed people, they say, okay, design STEM, let's say five people. Ask those five people to design stamps, and then they will take the one that they want and recommend. Now we have a situation whereby they ask, because they also spend time, say we want to be paid. So when I ask the chairperson of the stem advisor committee, why do we do that in her space? Why can't we just get it so that we have one person design the stamp and pay us? And that's what we are going to do. We have, I think that is what we're going to do to get the philanthropy working better. Even though it's a shocker for us that there is part of those topics that does not follow supply chain processes. The other thing with philanthropy, we have a situation whereby stamps and stamps are being printed, but they're not sold. No one sees the stamps. So you have a situation whereby a particular department or an entity in the country will ask for a particular stamp to be printed, developed and printed, but at the end of the day, no one is buying that stamp. Let's take for example. We have over 5 million stamps of Nelson Mandela, which are sitting in in Batman. There is no strategy to dispose of this threat. So what we're doing now in Chapter 6, we're trying to put a mechanism to make sure that all available threats, we have to find a way to get rid of those threats. It is a problem. We're told that they were unable to get rid of available Mandela threats, but they were the threat to treat more. You know, most threats, which is a problem. So that's the conclusion. Let me indicate that the decision on the TFO was not an easy one for us. We didn't take this decision lightly, and we can assure the community that it will never happen again. But the issues that are being raised are the same issues that we raised ourselves. But as it has been indicated, by the time we came in, that process has been going on and on. And we raised questions, why do we have such a process starting in April, but by the time we came in for us, it was still running. The very same lawyer, our own lawyer, never on said, this is not a winnable case. So to assure the community that that was an exception to the rule, we find that the situation already happening, and we could only do what was possible. Thank you.
Any other
board member
would want to
on the question of filling in the existing posts that are vacant at the moment? We have agreed with the board that the filling of the post of the CFO as well as the COO is critical and it should be done immediately. Thank you.
Regarding the CFG, CFG, since its inception, has been a loss-making company. It was only 1 year that it made profit. And historically, as they made loss, the post office made good. During the 2014-2015 financial year, a decision was taken that it's no longer automatic making good, and that then led to the situation we're sitting in now. The business that was 400 million a year has now turned down to 160 million currents a year. So they lost almost all customers. We have taken a decision to divisionalize CFG instead of running it as a standalone business. We have sent a recommendation to the authority and we are awaiting decision. But we are working very close to the business. Thank you.
Just answer on the number of questions related to the human resources environment. If I look at the question that was raised around the vacancies in the middle management sphere, at the current moment, at the beginning of the financial year last year, we started reorganizing the organization to address issues of silos, as was highlighted, for instance, the example that was highlighted by the chair in terms of the retail environment that does not look after the mail delivery environment. So we're trying to address the types of issues around the silo mentality within the organization and the way in which we structure, as well as in terms of reducing inefficiencies. Now, that project is at the final stages of implementation, and we're costing the cost of putting in place the adequate skills and capacity within that. And the project is basically determined in terms of the crew levels that we have redeveloped and redesigned, as well as we've put in place all the senior management and in the process of assessing our current senior management employees. So it's a little bit difficult to answer that immediately in terms of the direct question that was asked around the numbers as well as the cost associated with that, because we're just finalizing the current process, and that will then define, because we also as an organization have decided to look at developing a specialist tool, because one of the key things that when we looked at why we have such a lot of inefficiencies within the system was that a lot of our areas are staffed by generalists, they're not necessarily specialists, and so trying to address that issue. And now next meeting with the study committee, we have been over a complete deadline of the work, and we'll be able to provide more detailed information with regard to that. In terms of one of the other questions, the issue was brought up around the branch managers. In terms of the branch managers, when the TCTC, the total cost to company policy was implemented, there was some calculations that was done around some of the benefits. But when we look at, for instance, our current environment, because the organization pays for the full benefit,
of operation something like a legal aid, you will always get this discrepancy because an employee, a teller can have a number of employees that will be, a number of dependents, and because of the policy environment that we're still sitting with and we addressed, and I will explain now how we're addressing that. That creates some of the inequalities. What we've done in our existing cases is actually look at how do we address those inequalities within the system, because that will lead to an implementation of an equal pay for equal rate of equal work of equal value proposition, and it also will make the post office a more viable place for people to come to work at. One of the things that we've been struggling with, and that is why our implementation of senior management and effective management level of our organizational restructuring took a little bit longer, was that we struggled with getting the right person to get into the job because of the brand image that Supple had. So people don't necessarily when we were still in the middle of our crisis, or rather, but it's more in the crisis than what we are at now, because we're getting out of there, we're really hopeful around that people didn't want to necessarily join the organization. Now there's some promises of development, there is more, the passion factor for working for the post office is getting better. If you're looking at some of the other issues that we've faced and related specifically to the policy environment, as part of what we've done is we've reviewed all our policies around the human capital space. However, one of the key things was that one of our key stakeholders, the trade unions, were not willing to, in last year, to really engage with us on putting in place the policies. Until we actually had a way out of addressing some of the past inequalities as well as the historical promises that were made. What we as an organization did was we engaged the help of the CCMA, and we've been in a process with the CCMA where we are creating the environment for us to work through these issues, and to also look at how do we address the issues. What we've also done is that the new group chief executive officer has met with the unions, and in fact we've created the environment that can lead to us reviewing our policies and getting our policies adjusted by all the stakeholders. One of the things that we can actually report is that at the moment we previously had a number of recognition agreements, and we can never get the party to agree to get a consolidated recognition agreement. We're currently in the process of finalizing a new recognition agreement that will cover all the trade unions. In terms of some of the issues that were raised around the delivery agents, the delivery agents and as being a solution to address, especially delivery mail within the far offline areas, what has happened is that they are independent contractors, but with the financial situation that we face, they actually unfortunately fall within that state where services were not in place, and we started to try and address that issue by fast-tracking the payment, but at the same time also looking at a different delivery model. We have a model in terms of the RPA that works very well within the post office, and now we extended that model to look after delivery of mail as well, and also maintain to address the silos that we've created in the past.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to attempt to talk to the issue that was raised regarding instilling confidence in the portfolio committee with regard to achieving the plan. We also heard that a lot of plans have been presented. Now, I think it's also important for us to understand where we are and having joined the board. The first thing that the board has done, including Mark, the CEO, was to look at the FTP and look at whether the number can be achieved, and the FTP has been rebased. If you look at the plans that have been presented, all the things that are there were in the STP, but what is important is to find out whether those numbers are achievable. And there are several things that are critical. The one thing is that there wasn't money, investment to be made that would yield the revenue that was expected. And that has been one of the biggest issues, and some of those elements are in the IT, which you do have alluded to. The second thing that the plan relied a lot on was the issue of government business. A good portion of that was going to come from government business. And it had no success at all in that area. There are several reasons. One of the reasons perhaps is that we've been very generic in terms of the approach that we've made. And I'll talk about the latest opportunities that we've identified. So in addition to having numbers that have not been achievable because we haven't been able to invest to use the revenue that was generated and also the focus of government business, the numbers have had to be reworked. And a plan has been put together. Now, what is really going to be very critical is to make sure that it goes down to operationalizing the plan. And that communication has gone to both Mark as well as executives to understand the numbers, but it's important to see how the lead up to those numbers is and how we're going to make sure that the plan works. And just to summarize, some of the issues that we're looking at, for instance, is to put in the controls we can do, as alluded to, and there's a great focus towards that. And the reporting, you said earlier on that some of the reports that come through show different numbers. There is a dashboard that is being created right now by the strategy team, which we're going to be looking at, which is also going to make sure that there is consistency in the numbers that are produced and make sure that we understand what their variances and understand why the variances are there and what the outlook is to make sure that we change any variances. We also have had an opportunity with Robert, who's very well connected, to identify specific government projects. Because we cannot be generous to say we're going to go to government business. Well, I'm well connected in different areas, Chair. Talk to me about retail and be able to communicate. And then the other thing, so then for specific projects, it's not a broad brush approach to say we're going to do business for government, but especially for identified business opportunities and how long should be pursuing those and just been given the mandate to make sure that they're able to make those come alive. And the other thing that you mentioned, which is something that we've identified, is the issue of treating the post offices as a branch network, the same way that you'd apply a retail strategy. And those are some of the things that we're looking at. And of course, making sure that you've got a strategic approach along that. I've already mentioned the issue of the dashboard and the scorecard to track performance against plan and make sure that you're able to understand why the variances and what the strategy to turn things around. And just to summarize, I think we've got a good plan, and everybody agrees to that we've seen good and better plans in the past. The challenge already, and we've seen it in business as well, is that if the plan is not worked, then there's a problem, and that's what we've got a problem of. And unfortunately, the plan has worked by the people. So the point that you made regarding the middle management being a challenge is an issue that we need to look at. If people are not able to perform, then they are free, and find people who can be able to deliver. And maybe because the issue of restructuring the business and making sure it was the right numbers, the right things, and making sure that they're performing a contract is also something that we're looking at. Thanks, Chair.
I know it's just about instance not being connected, but I just want to understand. You're saying a board member is the one who's sourcing contracts with government. What is it?
No, it's not sourcing. Our role as the board is to identify opportunities to pass on the information to the executives. As an example, I sit on the board of Shishini Group, and I was able to talk to Trevor when he was still SMCO to say there are these rumblings in the boardroom in terms of the service of the post office. Perhaps we consider having time go to Cape Town, speak to Jane, who's the head of the financial services, and see whether they can have an approach. I did not get involved in the discussion, but gave him a line to say go to that, and I'm sure Mr. Mpuna will do the same. And he can comment himself. Okay, does that make sense?
Yes.
I just want to comment on the issues which were raised. I think Mark has spoken on the better number. As we are taking this discussion forward, we have already a meeting with the president. We are engaged in finance, and we hope that we should be able to get some way forward. On government business, Shepherdson, we assisted SAPO to engage the department because that was the first problem. They were not capable of engaging on their own last year, but we've been working very well with them. There were 21 departments which were keen to give some courier business and other businesses But we've then met a stumbling block from the chief procurement officer, who then wrote to all those people saying they can't do it. We've discussed this thing at the executive level, and the National Federal has proposed that they must amend PFMA, because any of the certified in the current, their interpretation is that the current framework of the PFMA doesn't allow for certified. So the student agent at that level, maybe Parliament will have to agree with it. Not only those who are certified, but the other certified for the small business, which is not being implemented at the moment. The abundance of I've been to some of them, and we continue to encourage people to go back to them. I visited a building in Johannesburg, where they moved to a mall, left their very strong building, and now they can't afford the rent, let alone the just financial crisis they are in. The rental has gone so high that they can't afford it in that mall anymore, which is just a about 100 meters away from their own building, where they are paying light, they are paying water, because they can't make the place to be there. So, the biggest abandoned building is their headquarters in Pretoria. They abandoned when they went to EcoPort. And we continue to encourage them, go back to your building. It's still there. They are paying huge amounts on rent and electricity for the building they are not utilizing. They are using a very small portion of their building. I'm continuing to encourage the CEO to visit it. It's a very beautiful building. It's next to Pretoria Station, where they can use the modern transport we have now in South Africa. The research, their argument was that it's not safe. And really, I've been through there, I traveled through the same process, I have not seen any unsafe activity in that area. If they feel that the station is unsafe, there is an entrance at the back. There is an entrance at the back where there is no unsafe activity at all. Sorry? No, I don't have a convoy. I don't have a convoy, but one vessel. I thought the CFJ issue, I hear that they're giving proposal. What we said to the board, remember, checkers and dismantles raising was that we should separate CFJ is for two companies which should never have formed. And there are other two companies which were linked somehow to CFJ, which is Fleet Services, which is a well functioning unit, and the token. So we appeal to them to make sure that they don't bring the risk to those companies with the possible fixation of the CFJ. And we hear them now that they're saying that we should regionalize it. I hope that they won't be transferring that risk to the whole group. So we're still waiting where what is happening with the liquidation thing, whether they want to liquidate first. We'd like to have that correct before we move in for forward. I thought I should just give those. We should not forget that problems of SAFO are not arising in the last 2 or 5 years. They are not. The presidential NIU report was going for the last 10 years. Well, from the events which happened over the last 10 years. And some of the policy decisions which were taken by the organization are also contributing. SABO used to have their own infrastructure. There was a time where it was fashionable to go to malls. They abandoned most of their post office, very solid building. And they are still there. Some of them are rented out, but they are all underutilized. So those are the issues. It becomes very difficult and costly to invest for the operations of a big company like this on a private property. You know, the amount of investment, much of it was regulated at every point. That's on the IT. And the IT system was huge. When we leave, we have to undo those things there. Millions and millions of friends were there. So those are the things we have to balance. I'm not saying we can't use private sector all this. You can't abandon your own government. Because whether you're using it or using it, municipalities don't allow us to fish off the water, they don't allow us to fish off the land. They continue to charge us also, isn't the risk. So we get a lot of prudent expenditure. So it's good. I thought I should just add that the report the president gave to us, we are still waiting a formal response on the cost of it. I'm happy that they are taking action because it's quite a serious report. And I'm happy that they are supporting the SIU. In some of our agencies, not example, we've seen the board acting against the SIU or going to oppose the SIU, which is not really recommended because these were professionals who were doing this investigation on behalf of government appointed by the MNC. Now that the results and recommendations are there, ours is to implement them as quickly as possible. The key thing there is that we must nullify the irregular or illegal or unlawful contracts like EcoPoint and others. We must recover some of our assets because it's corruption necessarily by itself, not occupied by managers. And that's why the workers have been complaining about. So the sooner the board brings that report to us, the better. So that we can be able to communicate to the head of state who wanted to respond by saying that we have not responded that. How are we implementing this? And so that we can also take on board the workers. The workers need to be informed of this report because they were also the head of state. So those are the things we'll be expecting them to say. Much of this problem, the real situation is as far as deteriorated because business was not coming back. I think Mark put that after the those downturns and strikes and the other issues. So the cost of business, the revenue has not increased. They continue to deteriorate. So we have to address that process by testing in South of what we can become. It is a as Chair said, if you go to poor areas, rural areas, we have commended members, it is sometimes the only form of sense for those people, particularly to talk about financial service. I also welcome the comment that we should not try and separate the cost from the cost of it. It's not a strategy which will make sure that it goes off the cost of it. To imagine a post-bank being a standalone company, it would be very difficult, especially in those rural areas. Maybe easy in urban areas. But we are not talking about ethnic, urban population, we are talking about total population, majority of which are small towns in the rural areas. So those are the things. We want to support the support because, not because of sentimental attachment. It is in difficulties, but we understand how those difficulties arose. But it is time now to put slack on the leaking test. If we don't do that, then we may reach we have not reached a terminal stage. It is not a survival for terminal image. It is very thick. It is in the ICU, but now we hope that the nurses and doctors who are handling this will be able to make sure that it recovers for life. The surgery will have to be done, cut off dead wood. We are confident that the management under the mask, and what is critical to us, the whole board, is the appointment of these other two top authorities, the CFO and the Chief Operations Officer. Without those, and we have also encouraged both the management. And I'm getting Mark is visiting branches. He is very popular in this branches, very popular. It helps the workers to feel that they are not being abandoned. They are confronted with a difficult situation. I'm happy that some of the board members are also making this because that's what will change things. The workers are the biggest investment we have in the operations of the corporate. Thank you very much.
Mr. Fox, I'm going to just
thank you. In response to Cape Town Post, so we're expecting you last week, so it's very keen to know that. The fellas, and they're nice, eh? They're friendly and they serve us quick. Just very quickly, Killian, I won't keep you too long. There doesn't serve the delivery obligations that the post office is required to meet through the legislative monopoly from ICASA. Has ICASA imposed any fines on SAPA for non-delivery or failure to meet that legislation? And the same applies to the International Postal Union. We've got there's a certain amount of revenue that's derived from the IPU based on the speed of delivery of mail. But similarly, there are also penalties if mail is not delivered in a particular time or sent overseas in a particular time. Have there been any penalties or ramifications as a result of that? Then, Acting CFO, in terms of the 79 million rand overdraft, that's obviously a reduction from the 350 million that was there in the year before. Is that because the commercial banks were reluctant or wouldn't lend to SAPA? And then in terms of the deferred taxation, is there a time period that taxation can be deferred? I know it's been taken away as an asset, now you've saved it, but is there a point at which you can't apply that anymore? That taxation, so it's unlimited. You can go forward for the next 30 years as long as the fabric keeps going. Is that correct? Mr. Mbuna, I don't know if you know Dr. Charlotte Mbuna. She's a good figure. I was wondering if there's a relation. The support travel and his artwork was actually used on a stamp. So, he's not one of those. I look forward to seeing a rebate to SP rather in a long line. And hopefully this one works. Thank you very much,
Chair. Just for the sake of completeness, let me address some of the questions. I think my colleagues on the board have addressed most of them, and I'm grateful to be amongst them. I think we need to get clarity on the question of creditor preference. We're not in a position to selectively deal with creditors. It's against the law. So when we get the funding that we require, we will then deal on an equal and unpreferred basis with all creditors. We are aware of those challenges, and some of them are not just challenges from SAPA's point of view. There are creditors whose businesses themselves are struggling financially because we haven't settled them. We're critically aware of that, but we have to act within the law. On the question of the new corporate plan, the first draft arrived last night, and it is based on the funding plan which I've taken to Treasury and the banks. And so those will be integrated into a rebased target which we're happy to commit ourselves to, and which was looked up by the team in SISAR, and so they hold themselves accountable for that. I've taken quite clearly the instruction on the CFO and CEO, and I'll commit to commencing that process immediately. As far as Post Bank's concerned, we do see it as an integral part of our future strategy. Whilst retaining its autonomy and its reporting rights as a reserve bank, we do see it as a major competitive advantage. The properties are just under review. The whole question of properties will be reviewed, and we will come back with recommendations to the board, which will filter through here. We have engaged with ICASA, and we're progressing that. And to be honest, Chair, I do feel that the other questions were addressed by my colleagues. Thank you.
Chairperson, I just want to answer the question of deferred tax. Deferred tax assets does not expire. It expires when the operating activity upon which it arose ceases to exist. So when SAPA one day decides to farm ostriches, we can't use the deferred tax assets on ostrich business. Yeah.
You wanted to say something?
Ostrich farming is not part of the corporate plan at this stage.
Yeah. And on the overdraft question, the reduction in overdraft at that month end was as a result of keeping cash back to pay some of the staff deductions like medical aid, etc., in the first few days of the following month. So it was just a timing effect. It wasn't a forced reduction in overdraft like that.
Okay, thank you very much to the team of South African Post Office together with the AG's office. another AG's office have left. Members, just quickly. I regulated the program. Very bad one. We were meant to deal with the issue of the annual report for BVI. It's not yet tabled. So in terms of procedure, we can't do that. But we have received a request from the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education to deal with the issue of school connectivity. Remember, we've had a meeting. So they've been requesting since last year well, to have a joint meeting. So we'll have that joint meeting next week. The issues that they have concerns around on connectivity. So we'll have that meeting. And then the following week, we have a joint meeting with the Small Business Portfolio Committee on ICT SME. And then we'll do the broadband run out on the 15th of March. And then the cost community comes in second. I thought, let me just bring this to the attention of members for this advice program so that members can look and understand that's when we're going to do this. The last announcement is sadly to announce the departure of this MMHS. This is his last meeting today. He was meant to leave last month, or last year. We kept through until now. That is because my funding advisor was not yet there, so we have to do that. He's been coached. I don't know why he announced he's not been coached. Oh, he's spending his time. No, he will lose. That's a wrong move. I would have advised my case to that person. But I think it's important for me, on behalf of the committee, to take this opportunity to thank him for his contribution in the community as a researcher. I know he's had been running around and all that. I think by extension, he'll still be in our list. When he's ready, we'll announce where he's going. But I think it's important for us to mention that in his new endeavor. I know most of us have traveled to send requests for interviews, conversations, and all that. He's been the brain behind the research analysis of the committee. So it's been really helping the committee a lot in our opinion. Most of us came here without ICT knowledge, not coming from the sector, with our different economies. We came from another corner, from my, you know. And I came from my other corner, all of us. And we relied on him for the knowledge and the information. He's been really quite helpful. Quite humbled and a person that is not in our countries. I know the team I work with, I normally push them to the edge and one of them, and he said, thank you right here and Jacob. So it's sad that he's leaving us, but I think one better opportunity comes, it can only comfort us today. It means that you work where they are and they're being recognized for what they're doing. So one's wishing well. I promised him something with the team of the committee, some maybe lunch or breakfast. We'll coordinate that with member so that we can say our farewell. But I thought it's important that I announce it because it's his last meeting today. Thank you very much. He does not have the right to speak, so he can't say thank you. Thank you. Okay. Wow. Oh, the new post office. I agree with that minister. Wherever he goes, he must be communicating about this sort of thing that is getting around. Members, thank you very much. The mission is adjourned.